Blog Talk Radio.
Context of white supremacy, Gus T. Renegade, justice, and for another program to share constructive information on what racism, white supremacy is, and how it works. Thank you all for taking the time to join the program. I hope you are getting constructive information. If you feel this is a waste of time, and we are just running off at the mouth, and it is of no value to you, please tune out, find another program. We have way too many problems and way too much that needs to get done for us to be wasting time. 2011, no wasting time. Again, we are in the middle of our fundraiser here at the Context of White Supremacy. So hopefully, folks, if you are listening, if you think the broadcast is constructive, please invest. That would be most helpful in aiding to continue our broadcasting efforts if you think it's constructive. We will be back tomorrow and every day for the remainder of January 2011. That is the attempt to broadcast every day to really be on the counter racist grind if we are going to fundraise and ask for people to invest in our efforts. And hopefully doing all of these programs will give us an opportunity to cover a lot of important material that is of value to non-white people, victims of racism. Hopping right to this program, definitely want to thank Deja and King Simon. They both recommended our guest for today's program. And within a few hours of one another, they recommended the same guest and just had high praise for his work. And they thought it would be of real value to Cal's listeners. So thank you, Khadija, longtime listener and investor, and King Simon, who was also helpful in getting me some other guests as well. Our guest for this evening's program, Tuesday, January 11th, 2011. He is the executive director of the International Preparedness Network. He is the author of Preparedness Now, an emergency survival guide for civilians and their families. A real important book, particularly with regards to black people. Post Hurricane Katrina and 9/11 and all of these other major disasters where folks were not prepared at all, and the disastrous consequences, just basics, not having water, transportation, some folks not even being physically fit to save their lives. Real important information, and I hope folks are listening up. We're also going to touch on our guest and his network, their current campaign to supply life straws, 1 million life straws. These are water filters for folks in Haiti who are still struggling from the earthquake that happened almost a year ago exactly. So we'll hop into all that real important information, and we're really pleased that he could take some time out of his busy schedule to speak with us, our guest for the evening, Mr. Eitan Edwards. Mr. Edwards, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Thank you for having me tonight.
Thank you. We really appreciate it. As I said, a lot of folks who have been listening, they know about your work, and they were really looking forward to hearing from you. I guess for folks who are not familiar, they did not catch the topic special and haven't read your book, could you share a little bit more background information just about who you are and the work that you do?
Well, disaster preparedness for the past two decades. Back in 1989, I, along with Paul James and Dr. Sinyad Amen, Chris Streeter, Ginger Davis, and some other folks, formed the International Preparedness Network as a disaster managers organization, which we called it the IPN at the time. We called it PRISM, and it was basically a FEMA adjunct, strangely enough. We decided to break away from FEMA, not only because of FEMA's teaching protocols weren't up to par, but they weren't giving us the assistance that we needed to actually kind of like do what we wanted to do. So we developed our own protocol, and it's called IA, and that eventually became like a martial art, IADO. And IA stands for improvisational adaptation, which is that people have to learn how to improvise and adapt to any situation that they find themselves in when a disaster strikes. And we began to collect members from not only from the United States, but from other countries like Japan and Africa and certain parts of Asia. So we decided to become the International Preparedness Network and became an NGO in 1999. And that's where we've been headed since. And, you know, after 2001 hit with the World Trade Center, it's been like one great big long ride, very intense, you know, 10 years. And we've had nothing but disasters in the past decade. I don't expect anything to be different in the new decade. The only thing that I know is a constant is we're just as unprepared as we were at the beginning of the decade. And sadly, people of color, people of African descent, people of Native descent are in, you know, a dire straits. As we're actually more dependent than we were at the turn of the decade, at 2000, when we are more dependent than we ever were. And I'm hoping that our effort in Haiti with the Life Straw Now is going to help us to move in a direction where we can learn how to become more self-reliant. This is an exercise. It's a discipline that we are engaged in that can help us to train ourselves to become independent by helping others, helping our brothers and sisters in Haiti. And so it's important that we recognize that we've got to have, to a large degree, to build infrastructures for ourselves. We can capitalize on the infrastructures when disasters strike. They will strike again. Otherwise, we're going to be in a worse situation than we were when Katrina hit. And, you know, so this is a wonderful exercise to not only help the Haitian people, but to also teach us how to build an infrastructure that we can utilize when these situations occur. And they will occur. They will occur. You know, so I'm wondering, I'm hoping that your listeners check out our website. First thing is to go to lifestrawnow.org. That's lifestrawnow.org and friend us. Come on to the website and learn about what we're doing. Get involved in the effort, because actually that the situation, the crisis in Haiti, has allowed for us to reach out to people that we connecting with folk, like even like with yourself and connecting with you and your audience. And we're actually building an infrastructure, because the cholera epidemic in Haiti that's like killing the people down there. And keeping in mind all the listeners, I want them to remember that this crisis in Haiti was not something that was endemic to Haiti. Cholera wasn't endemic to Haiti. It was something that was brought to Haiti. And we're actually developing a network that we can utilize because of this terrible crisis. And it's interesting how out of something so awful that something can rise, you know, like a phoenix. So this is a wonderful opportunity for us to not only learn how we can protect ourselves and, you know, to build up an infrastructure and to help the Haitian people in this time of crisis. Because obviously, as you can all see, that, you know, the best laid plans of mice and men at this point, right? The billions of dollars that was promised to Haiti, the hundreds of millions of dollars that was raised for the Haitian people, and they haven't seen it yet. And there's still just about the same amount of rubble on the streets as there was in, you know, last year, January 12th, when the buildings came down. We still have people buried under that rubble. The infrastructure is shot. It's practically non-existent. And the conditions on the ground aren't very much different than they were when the 10 cities and everything started going up in like around March. So this is an opportunity that we can use to help the Haitian people in a way that the larger NGOs have not been able to, except that there have been a few. I don't want to like castigate all of them, because there have been quite a few that have done some wonderful work, some incredible work, and individuals that have gone to Haiti and done some incredible work, the people coming out of their own pockets, they're spending their own money and flying to Haiti and taking care of the folks. But I want your listeners to recognize that that this is an ongoing effort. This is something that is not going to be solved in a year or 2 years or 5 years or even 10. And we have to understand also that we have to make a commitment to Haiti, but we also are making a commitment to ourselves when we commit to building Haiti, because it's a platform. You know what I mean? It's a platform. It's a, you know, one of the things that I want to do after we do the live straw now and we get 1 million filters to Haiti, the next thing I want to do is to go down there and to start to build the disaster-resistant prefabricated geodesic dome homes. For those of you who don't know what a geodesic dome is, it was an invention. Actually, the person who invented it, his name was Walter Bauersfeld. He used to work for Zeiss Optical Company back in Switzerland, and he was making a planetarium, and he just wanted to make a cheap way to make a great big dome. So he kind of made up a way to use polygons and to structure them in such a way where you can make a dome format. And Buckminster Fuller came along and improved on the designs by Walter Bauersfeld. So Buckminster Fuller is the person who advanced the geodesic dome principle, or the concept of the idea. And I wanted to take those down to Haiti. I wanted to build a lot of those, but I didn't have the money, and there wasn't any backing initially. But I know that with the Life Straw Now effort, once we get that moving down there in Haiti and we start to distribute the water filters and we go to the different areas and get that worked out, then we can also come down there with an inexpensive form of housing that can be built all over the island. It's inexpensive, it goes up quickly, and it's hurricane-proof. It's a wonderful device. It's earthquake-proof. There's no earthquake that's going to take down these structures. And these are the things that we can be doing. And in the process of us doing it, we'll learn how to do it here. You know what I mean? So this is one of the things that I want to impress upon your listeners.
Context of white supremacy. I want to definitely spend some more time addressing the Life Straw Now campaign. Before I do that, number one, I want to read a quick passage from the book. It'll set a nice tone for the broadcast. Mr. Edwards writes, "Being prepared is the conscious decision to become more aware of your surroundings on a local and global level and do all you can to protect yourself and your loved ones. Preparedness is understanding that the police, fire department, utilities, and the local supermarket cannot be relied on to protect or sustain you in the event of an emergency. Preparedness is not about living in fear, but rather honoring life and having the courage and wisdom to responsibly face whatever challenges may come." I feel like I could make that a placard for my efforts here at the context of white supremacy. It's not about being in fear. It's just about being able to prepare and have the courage to face whatever challenges may come. Before we continue, I do want to ask, number one, I think people can see your picture in the description to the program, but you are a black male. Is that accurate, Edwards?
Say again? Your voice chopped up. You asked if I was a what? A
black male.
Oh, yes, of course.
Of course. Okay. Just for folks listening, if they haven't seen you. Also, this program, I've unfortunately concluded that we are in a global system of racism, white supremacy. I use those two terms interchangeably, and I use the same definition for both terms, racism and white supremacy. The definition that I use for both terms is as follows. A global system of people who classify themselves as white and are dedicated to abusing and or subjugating everyone in the known universe whom they classify as not white. Do you believe that such a system exists, and do you think that definition is accurate?
I think that what we're dealing with is platforming. What I mean by that is that we can go back to, let's say, Dr. Lothrop Stoddard. For those of you who aren't familiar with Dr. Stoddard, he was a Harvard physician who wrote an extremely influential book called The Rising Tide of Color Against White World Supremacy. And in that book, Dr. Stoddard described what he would do to, let's say, effectively allow for the Caucasian race to maintain its dominance over the planet by, let's say, subjugating the masses of people of color around the world, as the numbers exceed the numbers of, let's say, the Caucasian race. And the infrastructures that we've been living under, the infrastructures, the mechanisms, the countries, the nations that we've been living under for the past, 400 years in that sense, were founded on the principles as such, because they expanded into territories not only in Africa, but even, in the Americas, where you have the native folk, the indigenous folk here, into Australia and Tasmania and all over the world, and subjugated the masses of people of color around the world for the expansion of their own empires. And what you're seeing now really is a shift, a major shift in turn of the end of the system. In fact, the system is ending, but what's unfortunate about it is that it still resonates within us as a people. And we have not, as a people, recognized, because we've been living under it for so long, and we've been living under a boot for so long, and recognizing what we can do, what's available to us now to do, that was not even available to us, let's say, even 20 years ago. Because the system that was constructed, that was founded on white supremacy, is dissolving. And I think that the best example of this, you can find it with China. And you can see the expansion of, China and the Chinese empire that's building. And, the greatest fear that the United States has is the ongoing expansion of Chinese influence and technology, even the stealth plane that they're flying recently, is because it's a threat to global dominance, and they know that the Chinese have been able to actually to succeed, and they're going to Africa and they're buying up the enormous swaths of the land and trading it for the resource and doing all these different things, because they're expanding in Africa. They're expanding all over the world. Their influence is expanding. They're locking down strategic materials and minerals, and they're building up cities. They can build cities overnight. And what, again, we're going against the collective mentality of, let's say, the foundations of the principles of white supremacy. These nations like the United States, France, Great Britain, it's not great anymore. The empire is gone. And we as a people, let's say as people of African descent, we've got to recognize that there's a new system, in place. A paradigm is shifting, and it's shifting towards science and technology. And we've got to recognize what we have the ability to do, like the Nigerians. Nigerians have an enormous brain trust. So many people from Nigeria that I know, associates that have become excellent physicists and doctors and engineers and masters of technology and science, and recognizing that the world is available to us in ways that it has not been because of white supremacy, and we have to take advantage of it. And unfortunately, but it still resonates within us. There's still, we've been taught by 400 years to hate ourselves. We've been taught to marginalize ourselves. We've been taught to tear ourselves down. And it has been, in effect, a silent enforcer, you know, where we become the enforcers of a principle that can't be enforced with anybody else, because the basic principles of white supremacy were founded upon whites or Caucasians being superior to not only people of African descent, but everybody else. And we've watched this dissolve over the course of the past, you know, 40 years. I mean, the crazy ruminations of William Shockley, the inventor of the transistor, the stuff with the bell curve, and all these different myths and lies about, you know, our intellectual inferiority and all these different things. We've watched all these things dissolve. And you got to keep in mind, too, that we were told that we weren't even physically equal to whites at the turn of the century. And I tell my son sometimes, he's 12 years old, when I tell him that that white folks used to say that we couldn't run distance races because our lungs would burst, we could not fight as heavyweight champions because we were inferior, we weren't as strong as white folks, we couldn't run as fast, we couldn't fly airplanes because our lungs would burst once you get past a certain altitude. All these things have fallen by the wayside, and now we see the advent of, like, Asia. We see China and, let's say, like, Asians outperforming Caucasians routinely in intellectual testing. And but keep in mind that 30, 40 years ago, that even Asians were considered to be intellectually, 50 years ago, right after we, you know, after World War II, you know, everything used to be a joke. When you saw something that was made in Japan, it was a joke. They used to even put it in cartoons. Nobody is laughing at Japan now when something is made there. And we see the change because there's no way to enforce white supremacy anymore outside of the infrastructures that they built. But other infrastructures can be built, and we have to take advantage of the opportunity to build infrastructures for ourselves and put it to rest once and for all, because as long as it's always going to live as long as it lives in our hearts as a people. And unfortunately, some of it still remains. So I see it as more as a construct of a system that was never designed for us to live in the beginning. You know, and I always look at, you know, America. America's never meant to be multicultural. It was never meant to be this melting pot. It was meant for Europeans to come in to maintain their dominance over all of the other groups. And when, you know, it's funny that when white supremacists talk about this, and white supremacists actually tell more truths than do liberal whites in that respect, because the white supremacists are actually telling you the truth about how the country was founded and who it was founded for. But with that said, we as a people have to recognize that to a large degree, that the conditions that we lived in, even, like I say, 30, 40 years ago, they've shifted. And it's not because they're not trying to maintain those positions, but they've eroded away. They can't maintain them anymore. There's nothing that they can base them in a foundation. There's nothing foundationally to base them in anymore. I mean, they used to say that escaped slaves had a disease, drapetomania. You know, I still laugh at that. Where that the only cure for a slave that's is affected with drapetomania is to beat the slave and to make the slave submit to the master's will by beating them and mistreating them. And they actually classified this as a physical disease. So all of this is over. So, I mean, generally speaking, that is known that, you know, that there's no more white people know that you can't, we're not physically superior to the blacks anymore, and they even know that we're not intellectually superior to the blacks anymore. So what's the superiority about? It's about having an infrastructure that we don't have. And as long as we talk a good game in terms of building something, we like to talk, we like to make speeches about it. And, you know, I've been doing this for 20 years, brother, so believe me, and this is all out of my pocket. This is not something that I was looking for the community to even assist me in financially. This was something that we my partners and I, we did this. We reached out into the community, and I took, you know, my training, and I gave it away. I did everything that I could do, working with all of the different groups across the country, working with my brothers and sisters in the BPP, the original BPP, and Project Jericho, and all of these other things that we've been doing. And, you know, that there's never been, you know, that the support for this kind of independent, this kind of a philosophy, which was one of the staples of the Black Panther Party, which was Juche, you know, what they talk about in North Korea, the being self-reliant. It's hard to convince us to be this way, to take responsibility for oneself, to wrest the reins of control from those who would subjugate you and learn how to be independent. And we like to talk about getting things done, but in most cases, the masses of us aren't ready to practice that. And what I would like to say and to share with the audience is that, listen, it's time for us to make some moves. It's time for us to do stuff. That's why we got the Life Straw Now together. That's why we're doing these things. It's time for us to prove once and for all that these are the things that we can do. A lot of the constraints that we had that were held against us 40 years ago, a lot of them are still up, but a lot of them are down. And I'll tell you something else, too. I'll be very honest here. Nothing stops me. You understand what I'm saying, brother? Hello?
When you say that, do you mean that you don't have to get permission from white people to do anything?
Yes,
I don't have
to get permission to do anything. Nothing has ever stopped me. There's been no racism. There's been nothing that has ever stopped me from achieving what I needed to achieve. Nothing has ever stopped me before. And I'll tell you something, brother, I'm about as black as you can get, okay? I mean, I wear black. Everything I do is black. It's just, you can't get any blacker than me in terms of my politics, in terms of where I stand, in terms of where I come from, you know, spiritually and emotionally. And have I faced it before? Man, I faced stuff that you couldn't even possibly imagine. I've had, you know, guns waved in my face. I've been called nigger. I've been all kinds of different things. I haven't let that stop me in any way, means, shape, or form. So, to a large degree, you know, we have to understand there are going to be hurdles placed in our way, but you just basically, some people chose to jump over the hurdles. I chose to just smash them into little tiny bits. So I don't let any excuses, you know, for me, like, I come from a wonderful family. I come from a family who taught me right from wrong. I come from a family who always loved and gave me love, and a lot of us don't have that kind of a playing field. We don't come from the same playing field that I did. I've always had a back. My family's always had my back, and a lot of us don't. For those of us who have had those circumstances and make excuses about what we cannot do in this system, I don't have any pity. I don't have any sorrow. I don't have any feeling except contempt and shame, because I know what they are capable of doing. I know what they can achieve. And racism isn't going to stop them from achieving it. And, you know, I used to tell people, I remember telling one cat who was with this racist organization who had made a threat against me, and, you know, the big joke was, I said, well, you know, God didn't make, what were you talking about, the gun? He was talking about some gun, and I said, well, you know, there's more than one gun, Chief, you know? I mean, we have to kind of take the attitude, what we're ready to throw down. This is not something that's going to be easy for us to break out of this habit. We have all of this vitriol for each other, but we don't have any for the system that oppressed us. You know, we have all of this anger and rage that we'll direct towards each other, but we don't have any anger and rage towards Haiti right now. The fact is that here you have the UN that brings in a contingent of folk from Nepal that they know that were affected by the cholera epidemic in Nepal, and they place them right along the sides of a river. They improperly dispose of their human waste, and they set off a cholera epidemic that up to now has probably killed nearly 4,000 people and infected 150,000. But where's the outrage about this? Where's the outrage of the money that was stolen? You know, black folks will sit up and we'll rant and we'll rave about racism, but yet and still we'll take $100 a month and pay our cable bills, you see, and talk about how we have no jobs, but we definitely have $100 a month to spend for cable television. You understand what I'm saying, brother?
Absolutely.
You feel where I'm coming from? Like, you know, we'll say, well, you know, the white man did this and the white man did that. But at the end of the month, we will definitely give that money to the cable bill so we can watch reruns of, you know, I Dream of Jeannie and Mr. Ed on TV Land and, you know, shows that they run over and over and over again. But we don't have, we have $100 to give to these cable companies, but we don't have $10 to give to our brothers and sisters in Haiti to get some clean water, to get some food, and to build shelters for them. But yet and still, we'll complain about that. And even in New York, you have 1 million subscribers to cable television, 1 million subscribers who are of African descent. So if the average that they spend is $100 per month to keep that cable television on, that means that every single month in New York, right, every single month that these cable television companies are literally collecting $100 million from people of African descent so that they can watch television. And at the end of the year, how much is that, brother? That's $1.2 billion per year just in this state alone that we are spending on cable television. And then we talk about white supremacy, and then we talk about what white folks are doing to us. But what are we doing to ourselves? I mean, let's be clear. You know what I'm saying? I mean, who is it when you look at the people who are killed on the streets in New York City? I think that the crime stats average up to be the murders on New York City right now alone. I think 67% of all of the murders by gun in New York last year, 67% of them were black on black. You see, other black men killing other black men. You see, so, I mean, this resonates within us. We are our own worst enemy in this respect at this point. And what's going on in Haiti right now is indicative of where we are as a people. We're not doing what we should do. Listen, if it wasn't for Haiti, if it wasn't for Haiti, if it wasn't for the Haitian, the construct, the revolution, listen, these are courageous people. They beat the French. They beat the British. You know, they beat the Spanish. They defeated these folk. They kicked them off of the island, and they've been catching hell for 207 years. Dessalines and Toussaint and all of the heroes, and Isle Danto and all of the heroines and the heroes, that wonderful brother who stood before the French army, who they were chasing this one brother across the island, and one of Napoleon's lieutenants had to write him a letter and said, we surrounded this man in front of a home. He was vexing the French soldiers. And the brother stands out in front of the home, and they surrounded this guy. They were terrified. He had a machete in his hand. And they said, well, let's burn the house down. So they burn down the house, and the brother comes out of the house with the house as a roaring inferno behind him. And the French figured, well, he's going to come to us now because he has no place to retreat. So what does this brother do? He looks at the French soldiers that surrounded him. He raises his machete into the air. He laughs, and he walks back into the inferno. And then Napoleon's lieutenant writes Napoleon, he says, sir, we must leave this island. We cannot defeat these people, for they die like Spartans. Right? So we're gonna just let these people in this place, in Haiti, we're just going to let them be devoured by these NGOs that are just looking to maintain themselves and use it as a cash cow so they can say that they're doing work in Haiti. Right? We're just going to let this happen. And then we're going to complain about, you know, what white folks didn't do and, you know, what white folks don't do. And yet and still, we have all of the financial power. We have all of the skills. We have all of the resources to go into Haiti and change it overnight. You see? We could change the situation overnight if we so chose to do it. They're looking for us to do it. But do you think we will, brother? I mean, seriously.
I do not have high hopes.
Yes, exactly. But see, all of this power is in our hands, all of this power, and we choose not to use it. And the thing is because we're still caught up in, you know, these concepts. Listen, we can do anything we want to do. Nobody's going to stop us but us. Nobody stops me, you know. And it's just like Brother Sam Greenlee. He wrote The Spook Who Sat by the Door. Man, I read that book like, I don't know, I don't even want to tell you how long ago I read that book. And then I saw the movie. And, you know, he gave folks the blueprint. You don't quit until either you win or you die. And a lot of us have you know, there used to be an advertisement talk about, you know, we'd rather fight than switch. We'd rather just switch. See? So, I mean, for me, for people like me, maybe I can't relate, maybe some of the people in the audience can relate. I don't think that if I were born in 1852 that, like, the concept of white supremacy would have been too relevant for me, because as long as I have a blade and as long as I have a fist, then and as long as I know how to set a fire, as long as I know how to make an arrow, then let's just say that it's going to be a little bit difficult to try to enforce something against someone who is willing to die and to kill to make sure that that's not going to happen. See? And this is why, you know, I'm not going to turn my rage against my own people. I turn my rage against my oppressor. And right now, I'll tell you something. At the end of the day, because we are so we're so dependent upon a system, we don't have to be dependent now, brother. We don't have to be. We can do for ourselves if we chose. If we chose to take some of that money that we spend on entertainment and on beer and all of these other frivolous things and all of this food that kills us at the different fast food places that we love. I mean, a lot of us can't even walk up a flight of stairs at this point, let alone fight in a revolution. And you know what I'm saying is true. You know, you can't go back 30 years. You don't see the brothers and sisters in the Panther Party. One of the things that you had to do was to be physically fit in any of these organizations. And look at us as a people now. Look at us. Look at us. Look at the food that we eat. Look at how we don't take care of ourselves physically. We can't fight. So, you know, and I hate to talk off your ear about this, but when you brought it up, it's just like, I mean, wow. You know, any of this stuff right now, of course, we live in a world that's been affected by this. If you want to see a real problem, go to India, you know. We talk about us all the time, but they still have a caste system set up by the Aryans 5,000 years ago. Every week there's 50 people getting killed in race riots in India. And if you want to think about race, go look up Indian skin lightening commercials on YouTube and you'll be surprised at some of the things that you see. I mean, this whole concept of white supremacy and light skin privilege goes back for thousands of years. But the thing is that it's up to us as to whether we're going to break through it or not. And unfortunately, so many of us have gotten comfortable with our nice jobs and our nice lives that we're not really interested in doing the things that we need to do to break out of it. So getting around back to Lifestraw, hey, this is an opportunity. You know, we have wonderful people working with us to make this thing happen. You know, it's something that you can do. One of these straws only costs like basically $4.75 and then an additional almost $2 to ship it. We can get these straws. We can give the Haitians a leg up, give them the ability to get some clean water, give them the ability to get a little, some sure footing in a terrible situation. And it's something that is easy for us to do. All we have to do is just make it happen. All you got to do is get involved. And by not getting involved, it enforces the whole idea and the whole principle, really, at the end of the day. And what you said about, you know, living in a system that is the driver, the basic operational system is white supremacy. Well, that is basically enforcing it at the end of the day. Because if you're not going to do anything for yourself and you're basically going to just stand by on the sidelines and let somebody else do it for you, what does that mean? You know, what does that mean? And it's a sad statement, but it's the reality. And we're in a crisis. And I'll tell you something else, too, brother. There's things coming down the pike that I'm not going to get into with this occasion. You know, that if you think that what's going on in Haiti is bad, there's things that can be much worse. And I would say within the next 2 to 3 years, we're going to see some of these things actually happen. Like, you look at what's going on in Australia right now. Did you see those floods? Now, imagine if the Australians had no infrastructure to help to rescue the people and to help to put the people in other places where they can kind of rest and get food and medicine and water and everything else. You know, we're looking at an infrastructure that can't serve the 308 million people that we have here. We can get an incident in the United States that can be 10 times the size of the Katrina incident. What is going to happen when this does occur? And I'm not saying it's not going to happen. I'm saying when it does occur. What's going to happen to people in our community? People who are completely and absolutely dependent upon others for their existence. completely and absolutely dependent. Okay? We have a community where we have so many people with diabetes and so many people with asthma and so many people with all these different afflictions, all these medical problems. If you don't have your albuterol, if you don't have your insulin, if you don't have all these other things, it doesn't come from the United States. Most of the insulin is manufactured in Europe. What happens when you don't have access to that? What happens in mass to people that don't know how to grow their own food? What happens in mass to people that don't know how to do any first aid? What happens in mass to them? What happens then when they don't know how to work a generator or an alternator to develop power, to do all the things that we need to do to maintain ourselves? This is what we're faced with, brothers and sisters. This is where we're at right now. This is not a joke. And the reality is that we basically have to make, we have to make a decision as to what we're going to do. We have to make a decision as to what we have to do. So, I don't mean to depress y'all,
Is it going back to that phrase? It's just about looking honestly and fearlessly to face the challenges and solve our problems. That's all we're about here, sir. I wanted to pop to my co-host, Justice, see if she had some questions. Justice, if you would like to ask Mr. Edwards some questions, your line should be open. Please go right ahead.
Hello, Mr. Edwards.
Peace.
Do you think white people using video cameras to invade our privacy has anything to do with practicing racism, white supremacy?
No, I'll tell you why. Because I think that we do enough of that ourselves at this point. Some of the things, before we even start to explore, what other people are doing to ourselves, I think that we need to kind of explore what we're doing to ourselves first. And some of the things that I see, I can give you an example. You look at some of the really negative stuff that came out in hip-hop, that's enforcing white supremacy. When you basically attack your own women, you attack your own community with your music and your entertainment, and you support that. Or you support people who generate revenue from a community but don't contribute to the community. There's a very good song by KRS-One where he does a hip-hop song called Black Drug Dealer, You Better Wise Up. And he's talking about drug dealers. If you're going to deal drugs in the community, don't be a fool. Take your money and open up a school. We don't open up anything. You have all of these wonderful millionaires that make an enormous amount of money from the black community, from hip-hop and all of these different things, but yet and still you don't see one supermarket, you don't see one grocery store, you don't see one laundromat, you don't see one anything run by any of these folks. No employment, but they don't have any problem taking money out of the community, but they won't put it back. That's enforcing white supremacy. But, people with cameras and all of this kinds of stuff, from my standpoint, that's irrelevant. What we're doing to each other is basically manifesting the concepts and principles of white supremacy. And once we can kind of correct ourselves, then I think we can get to all of the static that we have around us for the inconsequential stuff. Right now, I can tell you that the shackles that we have on our wrists right now are shackles that have been placed there by the concepts of white supremacy, but we've had the keys a long time ago, and we're not using the keys to get out. We've basically decided that we are going to be the our own oppressors in that respect. So, cameras, white supremacy, they're going to maintain their system. They're going to do what they're supposed to do. It's the system. And what do we expect? They're going to try to do everything that they can to maintain control and authority. And if you have an opportunity, but it's not stopping the Chinese from doing what they have to do. The Chinese are building their planes. The Chinese are building their cities. The Chinese are buying up Africa. The Chinese are going around. Chinese aren't white. See? The Chinese are doing what they have to do. And we just have to stop making excuses. We need to get busy and do what we have to do. We need to do what we've got to do. That's basically my answer to it.
Why is your main focus on self preparedness?
Self, because you have to deal with self before you deal with anything else. It has to be, everything has to start with you as opposed to starting with other people. It's almost like a cell. One of the concepts and principles behind my philosophy, or IA, is that I use the animal cell as a model to build my mechanism. In other words, you look at an animal cell, you look at a human cell. You are at the nucleus, you. You, the being, it's like a cell has a nucleus. You're the nucleus of your own cell. You have organelles that function within the cell that do different things. You have your endoplasmic reticulum. You have your Golgi apparatus. One processes proteins. Another processes energy. Another, the mitochondria in the cell that produces ATP, and that produces energy. And you have components within your own cell that allow you to maintain balance within your respective environment. So if you're the nucleus, you might have a personal kit that functions. They have tools, a flashlight, a multi-tool, a whistle, matches. This allows you to maintain homeostasis. When you get, your body has to maintain homeostasis in order for it to function. When you get to a crisis, you have to maintain homeostasis in whatever respective environment that you're in so that you can survive the crisis. So, but all of this begins with self. You know, you are your own responder when you get into a crisis. Nobody's coming to get you but you. And we have to get into the principle. This is what the principle of Juche, the North Koreans speak about it in the Black Panther Party. This was part of the 10-point program, to be self-reliant first. When you are self-reliant, you're not dependent on others to do anything for you. As long as you're dependent on somebody else to do something for you, then you're subject to the will and their whims. And as long as we have to worry about, take food from somebody else, as long as somebody else is making our clothes, as long as somebody else is making our shoes, guess what? They can do any damn thing that they want to do to us any time that they want to do it to us. See? So that's why my focus is on self. It's never been on anything else but self. And I can tell you that it's worked for me. It has absolutely worked for me and the people around me. And all I would say to you, sis, and all of your listeners, is to do for self. Marcus Garvey spoke about this, and Marcus Garvey put it even more bluntly than I do. He says that if we cannot, as a race, to do these things for ourselves, as every other race has been able to do, then we must perish. And if we can't stand for ourselves, and if we can't decide that we are going to fight and to be self-determined, then, you know, of what point is there to even have life if you have to live like a parasite? You see, just like what Malcolm X once said, you can't integrate with empty hands. Okay, so let's put something in our hands and then dare the person who tries to take what's in our hands, dare them to try to take it, you know? And you know, it's like, I think Claude McKay wrote the poem, If We Must Die. In order for you to maintain your dignity, you have to recognize that in order to do that, in some cases, that you're going to suffer the consequences. I'd rather die with honor than to live without dignity. And a lot of us, unfortunately, across this country, have chosen to live without dignity. And that is to live and to become dependent, and to become dependent on the very system that actually subjugated you in the first place, and to have no problem with that. So in other words, you will be dependent on the very same system. You know, we think about this in terms of MKUltra. I don't know if you're familiar with that. In the 1950s, the Central Intelligence Agency started a subdivision that was designed to kind of like deal with Russia. But it was called MKUltra, and it had a whole bunch of different projects related to mind control and a whole bunch of other things, biological warfare and everything else. You know, we've had so many things directed towards us to control us, to maintain control and authority over us as a people. And it just blows my mind that we will have no problems with actually turning to a system that has a history that we can prove of just devastating us, and then at the same time criticize it. You know, it's just like it doesn't make any sense. It's just crazy to me. It doesn't make any sense. So, I mean, it's just very, very, I just really can't imagine where our headspace is at, where we can not understand the concepts of being self-reliant and being able to say, I'm not dependent on anybody. I don't have to worry about my food coming from someplace else. I don't have to worry about, you know, what I'm going to do, my water. I can make my own clothes. I can do whatever I have to do without the system. And I think that is the most important thing for people who are, you know, compromised. And, you know, it's something that I've been living. I've been living this for pretty much all of my adult life. And I would advise anyone who's listening tonight that to think that over, to look at what Marcus Garvey wrote and look at what Marcus Garvey said, and to recognize that this is something that wasn't just empty words. It was an idea and a principle that he lived by. And I think it's something that we have to recognize, that it's something we need to do as a people. We need to rethink that strategy for ourselves, even in this 21st century. Hello?
What situations are most likely to happen to be prepared for?
The natural disasters are the things that you have to be prepared for the most, because they're the most frequent. The natural disasters like an earthquake, depending on what region that you live in within the United States, if you live in the western areas where you're closer to what's called the fire ring, you've got to be prepared for large-scale earthquakes and tsunamis and mudslides and a number of different types of disasters that those regions that frequently strike those regions. After that, you have the technological disasters because, you know, we've got 104 nuclear power plants online in this country. And sometimes it's subject to failure, as what happened with Chernobyl, you know, back in the 1980s. And, you know, eventually we might have a failure like Chernobyl here in the United States. We have to be prepared for that situation. But we can do that by having a preparedness plan so that we know. Like, we live in New York City, and where I'm at right now, I'm about 20 miles away from Buchanan, New York, and that is where the Indian Point facility is. And if there was a major critical failure at the Indian Point facility, that you'd have to evacuate every single resident in the five boroughs to get them out of what's called the peak injury area. Because if you didn't, then you'd have a couple hundred thousand casualties just from radiation alone. And it would contaminate tens of thousands of square miles of acreage, and it would be something that, you know, it wouldn't be a tolerable situation. So natural disasters, technological, environmental disasters like what happened with the Gulf Coast oil spill, and then we have to worry about civil disasters, which are human-made terrorism, large-scale terroristic events. Eventually, the thing that people are frightened the most of are nuclear weapons or improvised nuclear devices being used in American cities. I would say that this is definitely a possibility, probably within the next 5 years or less, that we're going to see it. And when it does happen, you can bet that the paradigm is going to shift even more than it did in 9/11. And again, people have to be ready for these eventualities. And I say eventualities, not something that if it's going to happen, but when it's going to happen. And we've got to recognize that if we don't set infrastructures, personal infrastructures for ourselves in place, then we're going to fall victim to everything that happened, you know, hunger, disease, injury, illness, and death. And it's something that, you know, we can't avoid death, but we can definitely avoid the other things if we set about creating personal disaster preparedness plans and long-term self-reliance plans.
In your book, Preparedness Now, do you have tips for children?
Absolutely. Children have to have their own personal kits. Like one of the things that I have a personal kit for my son. My son has a little tiny personal kit that he carries with him when we go on trips. And yes, children must have basic preparedness items that they carry with them at all times. One of the things that children need to have is an emergency evacuation card. Like for instance, if in the event of a major disaster, sometimes parents cannot get to a school to pick their children up. What the children need to know is they need to know where they would go if their parents could not come and pick them up. And they can carry little evacuation cards that have all the information where the parents will meet them, who to call, who to reach out to, where they can go and be safe. All this information be in a little personal card. And also children can carry little things with them too, like flashlights, little things that they can take into school without them being confiscated, because you can't take multi-tools into the school, but you can take a flashlight, you can take a whistle, you can take an emergency evacuation card, and you can bring some other things, too, that can help you in the event that you are separated from your parents. And you also have to train in the same way. The children have to be trained by the parents in the same way that they train themselves, so that the children know what happens, what the protocols are when there is an earthquake, when there is a flood, when there is a tornado, when there is a hurricane, where the children should go in the house if there's a tornado, where the children should go in the house if there's an earthquake, if they, you know, when they should come out of the house. If there's an earthquake, there could be a release of gas, and children have to know that just running across the floor with their shoes and producing a static spark can trigger the gas and create an explosion. So all these little things that people need to know, children need to know them too. And yes, children must know all this stuff just as much as the adults do. And it can start just as early as 4 or 5 years old. You can start to teach children that. Maybe even, if depending on the child, even a little bit sooner.
Do you know who made life straws?
Yes, the company is called Vestergaard Finstrin, and actually, it was the person. His name is Peter Vestergaard Finstrin, and he's the CEO of the company. And there was another organization that works with them. It's called the Millennium Development Group, which has lofty goals of eliminating world hunger and poverty. You know, God bless them. I would hope that would be the case eventually. And it was designed as a tool to use for, actually, it started out as something that people needed, you know, people who go on expeditions and things, and then they realized that the value of it for developing nations, and they developed it as a tool for developing nations to purify water, as a waterborne illness is one of the biggest killers in the world, and they recognized that this was something that could work to help to combat waterborne illnesses.
What does the life straw do specifically?
The life straw filters the organisms that mostly affect folk that have contaminated water, like the specific organisms that come from the gastrointestinal tract of humans, as in the bacteria E. coli, Escherichia coli, or also the cholera, which is another form of bacteria, Cryptosporidium, and a number of other different things, Giardia lamblia, these parasites that get into the intestinal tract. They come from the intestinal tract and they get into the water because the water is contaminated with human feces. And the human feces has a lot of these organisms in it, and it can make you very sick. And in some cases, like cholera, it can make you sick enough to die. And what the life straw filter does is it traps these organisms so that it cannot contaminate the water. When you suck the life straw filter, you place it in a water source that may be contaminated. When you suck on the filter, it actually filters out all of the dangerous organisms. The larger life straw filter, which is the life straw family, you pour the water inside of it, and it drips through a filter. And that life straw family filter even filters more water than does the life straw personal filter, which is the small one. That also filters viruses as well. So if there was like a certain type of virus, like a common virus, a flu virus, or even viruses that you haven't seen very much lately, like a smallpox virus, this filter can filter those kinds of viruses. And viruses are much smaller than bacteria, so they're harder to defend against. But the life straw, as it stands today, is the most effective filter of its type. And in terms of its cost, it's the cheapest, most effective, safest filter in the world that's available today. The small unit can filter 1,000 liters of water. That's enough for one person for 1 year. And the larger filter can filter 18,000 liters of water, and that's enough for 5 people for 3 years. So it's an incredible device. It's an incredible tool that can provide families with the ability to have a safe water supply while they're developing a longer-term solution for their water source issues. And it's something that we can use right now. It's something that we need to get down to Haiti, as many of these as possible, until they can get the reservoir fixed, which I'd hope can happen, you know, sometime in the near future. But until they can do that, they're going to need the ability to kind of collect clean water, and the life straw is the best way for them to do it.
I don't have any more questions at this time. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, young lady.
context of white supremacy, I want to make sure I share some of the tips from your book and the website. It's linked. If you are listening at Blog Talk Radio, the website where you can get more information about preparedness and the Life Straw Now 1 million water filter campaign for Haiti, just go to readyforanything.org. It is linked in the description for this program at Blog Talk Radio. Just click International Preparedness Network and it will take you to the website. But the address again is readyforanything.org. And the book, again, Preparedness Now, an emergency survival guide for civilians and their families. One of the things in this book that you talk about and on the website, I know this is specifically on the website, you talk about the significant impact that urban gardening could have, and you get to the Victory Gardens from World War II. Can you kind of talk about that and how, I mean, just what a significant impact you talk about working against white supremacy, just if more black people said, I'm going to grow a garden in my house or in my backyard and use that to supplement food, that would be working against racism. Could you elaborate on that?
Absolutely, absolutely, because here you have, I'm going to give you an example. There's a family in Pasadena, California, by the name of the DeVries, and they have been able to build a sustenance farm, one-fifth of an acre that they live on, but yet and still they've been able to take that fifth of an acre and build a sustenance farm enough for four people to live and to have a protein-rich diet, to grow all of their food on that property. They haven't been to a grocery store in years. They're completely off-grid. They're not dependent on anybody to live. The house is paid for. They use solar power to generate electrical energy. They use solar power to heat the water. They have chickens on their property. They even have a goat to give them goat milk. All of this on one-fifth of an acre. Now, for those black folks that are fortunate enough to have their own homes, and what do they have out in front? If they have a lawn and they're not growing food on it, or they're just growing a lawn for the benefit of just having a lawn, even asking yourself, well, what does the concept of the lawn come from, the manicured lawn? Well, it comes from basically Western Europe, you know, primarily during the Renaissance period when the king of France and, you know, the king of England wanted manicured lawns and everything, but it doesn't have anything to do with real life. And instead of using that lawn just to you know, like you maintaining it like a golf course, like you have a little miniature golf course out in the front of your house, what you need to do is to stop putting chemicals in the ground, your Scotch turf builder and all these different things that poison the soil, and what you need to do is to use that use that area and to start growing some food. And
Mr. Edwards, I just want to say two words. This is fantastic information. I just want to say two words, white identification. Thank you.
Right. Thank you. Thank you. And what are you identifying? Exactly. There you hit the hip nail right on the head. What are you identifying with when you're living like that? And you know what? I'll tell you something else, too, that the white folks that are forward-thinking don't want to have anything to do with that philosophy because it's based on the monarchy and the very principle that actually held them in bondage in their own countries, in Europe, in France, and in Germany, and in England. And these monarchs that used to make, you know, when they were serfs, and they were basically the property of the king. And the thing is that they're not thinking about using their lawns. Any forward-thinking white person knows that they're going to use that lawn as a garden where you can have organic food that's not genetically modified and all of the different things we're subjected to now when we go to a grocery store. You'd be surprised at how much food you can grow on a lawn. And I would suggest to anyone who's listening to your show that if you have a lawn, you need to get a garden started on that lawn, and you need to start growing your own produce. And if we did this collectively, if we did this in mass, just like we did in World War II, when Victory Gardens accounted for one-third of all of the produce in the United States came from Victory Gardens, we're not using the territories we have available to us. You know, and there's so many different growing techniques available to us now, not only with just growing in home and urban gardens, but we also have hydroponics. And a way that you can do hydroponics where it's low cost and inexpensive and efficient. There's aeroponics now. There's aquaponics. There's a wonderful person. His name is Will Allen, and he's got a company called Growing Power, an organization, trygrowingpower.org, where this person is producing upwards of nearly 1 million pounds of food per year to give away to the communities. That this is a wonderful organization that I think you should familiarize yourself with. Will Allen has done this. He got a MacArthur Genius Grant. He didn't get a Jay-Z grant, which he should be able to do. He should be able to get a Jay-Z grant. He should be able to get a Sean Puff Daddy Combs grant. But unfortunately, our folks that have the means and have the money aren't giving those grants. But so the MacArthur Foundation gave him a grant of $500,000 to build up his organization Growing Power. And what has he done? He's shown us a way where we can grow food in our communities and give it away for free if we need to. We don't have to be dependent unless we want to be dependent. And growing a garden is a sure way for us to learn how to become dependent and to do the things that we need to do so that we can break the bonds and break the tradition of our white supremacy in the United States.
Fantastic. You can read more information about these urban gardening and different tips and how to start your own compost pile, all that good stuff. It's on the website. the address again, readyforanything.org. You can grow a garden, grow some cucumbers, broccoli. Right. That will work against racism and white supremacy.
But it does. The thing is that, you know, that you people don't understand that part of it, the only way that you can reinforce it is to be dependent. You know, it can only be enforced by dependency. If you're dependent on somebody else, listen, if you say, when you speak about the whole concept of white supremacy, even in the way that Dr. Stoddard did, the only way it can be enforced is if they have control over you, you know, is if they're feeding you, if they're clothing you, if they're taking care of you. But once they stop feeding you, once you can say, I can feed myself, and once you say, I can clothe myself, once you say, I can provide water for myself, then the last thing that you have to come down to is, can you protect yourself? See? And once you can protect yourself, then there's no such thing as white supremacy anymore, because I'll tell you something. The only way that it could have been enforced is if we didn't have guns, we didn't have the methods to repel our subjugators. But if we had those methods available to us, then there wouldn't be any such a thing, because we'd be able to maintain our own autonomy. We'd be able to maintain our autonomous existence. And as long as you're dependent on somebody, as long as you cannot be autonomous, then you're subject to whatever rules they lay down. So, yes, food is a major component. Water is a major component. Electricity is a component. As long as you're dependent, you are subject to the rules and authority of somebody else. And I don't go for that. I just don't. Never did. You know? And this goes beyond race, this goes beyond anything. I don't think any human should be subjected to anybody else's authority and rule in that respect. I mean, you know, we pay for electricity. How do you expect that we pay for electricity, brother? I mean, you know, when Thomas Edison did his work, he never expected anybody to pay for anything, and goodness knows that Nikola Tesla, and for those of you who may be familiar with Nikola Tesla's work, he certainly didn't, because Edison stole a lot of Tesla's stuff. Like, you know, the whole idea of alternating current came from Tesla, not Edison. But the fact of the matter is, you got a price on an electron. A watt hour? What's up with that? Because as far as I can remember, in terms of basic electrical theory, I never saw a price tag on an electron. But yet and still we're paying for electricity. But how is that? Because technically, electricity is really free if you really think about it, isn't it? Because you harvest it just like anything else. So when you walk across a rug and you generate static electricity from the Tribow electric effect, I mean, should we be paying for static electricity too? Or what about crystal electricity, piezo electricity? You know, so electricity is there in nature for us to harvest, but yet and still we're paying for it. Why is that? Because of a system that we've been placed in, where you have a system that's ruled by a bunch of folks that want to make as much money as possible and decided that they're going to put a price tag on an electron. Okay?
Yes.
So this is madness, and we have to break away from the madness. And that's what this is all about. Self-reliance is about breaking away from the madness, becoming independent. Independence. Freedom. Because we ain't free yet. We're still dependent.
Agreed. Justice, did you have a question?
Yeah, I don't mind. Do you mind if I just squeeze in one really quick?
Go right ahead.
Do you know how broccolini is formed at all?
Say again?
Do you know how broccolini is formed at all?
Broccolini?
Woo!
Yeah, it's a vegetable.
Oh, broccoli? You mean broccoli? Oh, you're talking about, okay.
Well, it's a vegetable. Well, it's called broccolini.
You mean the broccolini, the hybrid?
It's long, yeah. And it kind of...
Yeah, you're talking about a hybrid vegetable. You mean how is it grown?
Because I've heard that broccolini is formed with two seeds and then put together somehow.
It's a hybrid. It's a hybrid vegetable, and that's, you know, look, corn is a hybrid, maize is a hybrid, but yes, it's a hybrid vegetable. That's what we're subject to. But you know, because listen, I'm going to have to cut this because I'm literally in the middle of a snowstorm now in New York. Unfortunately, we're actually driving and the snow is piling up around the car. So,
wow,
no, I mean, literally, I mean, it's funny. It looks like it's not a blizzard yet, but it's getting there. It's getting kind of funky out here.
Wow.
Yeah, it's really getting kind of funky. We're actually driving into a driveway to kind of get away from the snow. So, yes, broccolini is a hybrid vegetable. We were eating a number of different hybrid vegetables. And the way to get away from that is to grow victory gardens. To grow gardens in your own homes. Listen, you can grow a lot of food. You know what? I'm going to give you an example. I'll leave you on this note. It's a funny note, and I'm not. It's very, very funny story. I have a friend who, let's say, grows stuff in, let's say, their particular apartment, okay? And you'd be surprised at how much you can grow in a small apartment in terms of food, in terms of everything. And when I saw what this particular person could do in the way that they did it, and recognizing that, you know, you can grow tomatoes and other things in very much the same way, and just to have an enormous yield in a space the size of a bedroom, it's just remarkable. So recognize that we're only as compromised as we choose to be, and it's making choices. Regarding the self-reliance, not only allows us to be self-reliant, but it also allows us to be free. And I got to leave you on that note.
Thank you so much for sharing some of your Tuesday evening with us. And please stay as safe as possible. I am no fan of the cold weather. Hopefully,
you
get back.
Anyway. You sound like my son. Yeah, I'll bet you'd love it here, young lady. I mean, this is like a winter wonderland, unfortunately. But, you know. Oh, yes. Well, I want to say to your listeners one last time to visit us, please, at lifestrawnow.org. That's lifestrawnow.org. Come on and join us, y'all. And also the readyforanything.org and readyforanything.org. Join us. We're fighting to be free. It's all about freedom, and freedom only comes to those who are willing to be independent and self-reliant. You must be self-reliant. You must be prepared. If you're not self-reliant, if you're still dependent on somebody to feed you, to clothe you, to do all of these things, then you're just as compromised as you were when the shackles were on your legs and around your wrists and when we were in the good ship Jesus and floated over here. We've got to break this cycle now. This is the 21st century. It's time for us to wake up and do what we can do.
Again, a real privilege to have as our guest for the evening, Mr. Eitan Edwards. Thank you so much, sir, and we will definitely try to have you back on the program again soon.
Hey, and thank you, brother. I appreciate your work, too.
Yes, sir. We will be in touch.
All right. Thank you, brother.
Take care.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
Context of white supremacy. Shame. I was about to go to the phone lines. I had like a couple more questions. I will take a quick commercial break, and I will share some of the other info that he has on his blog, just about water and some of the other things that I thought were important, and then I'll check the phone lines if folks want to make a comment. Context of white supremacy.
Is racism hurting you?
On issues of race, are you unable to speak, think, and act with clarity and confidence? Are you tired of laughing when nothing is funny, smiling when you are not happy, agreeing when you really disagree? CounterRacism.com, you can learn specific strategies and techniques to counter the behaviors of the people who practice racism in all areas of activity. Using words correctly, following counter-racist logic, even counter-racist science projects designed to reveal what racism is, how it works, and how to counter it. The open source code writing format allows you to pick and choose from a variety of counter-racist suggestions so you can produce the code that works for you. Stop by counterracism.com today and help replace racism with justice.
That's counter-racism.com.
Our people are very serious about not being very serious. Meanwhile, white people are very serious about playing hardball against us. And this hardball is called genocide.
Context of white supremacy. Again, our guest for the evening, Mr. Eitan Edwards. Sorry he could stay with us a bit longer, but I will earnestly make an effort to have him back on the program to continue the dialogue. I thought he had a lot of great information. I did not agree with, though. I don't think that any non-white person can truthfully say that they don't have to get permission from white people to do things. I know even with the gardening, which I totally support, garden, you know, if you can't do anything else, if, you know, Gus, I can't say that I'm not going to have sex with a white person. Gus, I'm not going to read the code book. Gus, I'm just not down for suspecting white people. Gus, I can grow corn. I can grow broccoli, like garden. But even with that, I know white people have made rules and said, no, you can't grow certain products. You can't grow anything, period. I think their laws, they were just talking about that they were making proposals for laws to say that you can't have a garden. If you live in certain areas, I know you cannot turn your front lawn into a garden because white people have rules about that. So I wholeheartedly support it. And it also has in the urban gardening section on the blog tips about how you can grow in your home. Lots of options, but just, you know, white people are in charge. They do make the rules, unfortunately. And I'm so glad he touched on that. The information about the lawns and where that comes from, white identification. I was thinking about that. I was like, man, I think people were not being truthful about how identified they are with white people and how much of a connection they have to white people. People are not being honest about that. Even myself, I mean, it is in the atmosphere. You are breathing in whiteness and white people and racism, white supremacy every second. I mean, at any rate, Justice, did you have any comments or questions about what Mr. Edwards had to say?
I don't know. I can't really think of anything right now, but it was interesting. And speaking of atmosphere, I was studying atmosphere, biosphere, and all of those in my in science.
Oh, on her job, ladies and gentlemen, academically, and from the counter-racist perspective as well. On her job, and she is a consistent water drinker. he talks. I mean, it's true. It's true. She is a consistent water drinker. Very important. The information on the readyforanything.org blog with Mr. Edwards. One of the things they talk about, water. I mean, gotta have water. Gotta have water. I mean, no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And they talk about emergency water storage and filtration. I'll just read this info because I think it's important. And, yeah, I'll try to get him back on the program to see if he can go over some other details just about things you should have in your home, little multi-tools like that have like a screwdriver and a flashlight and a saw, scissors, that sort of thing, good gadgets that you should have in the house. Water that you should have maybe stored, those sort of things, particularly black people, because, I mean, you know, things just happen to us. But this is number 7. He has top 10 emergency storage things that you should have. And number 7, emergency water storage. When disasters strike, portable clean water is your most precious commodity. If you saw the film The Book of Eli, you had disaster, emergency. You had people killing one another over water. Not only must you have an emergency supply stored away in containers, you must also have the ability to filter out contaminants. So you will need to own a high-quality water filter. It doesn't matter if you live in a home or apartment, you must have an emergency supply of water that extends beyond the 72-hour, 3-day recommended amounts. And on his blog, Mr. Edwards talks consistently. He writes saying that, you know, this 72-hour recommendation is like the bare minimum. You should be thinking a week, 2 weeks, because, I mean, think Hurricane Katrina. 72 hours would not have saved the day. You would have been hurting if you just had enough supplies to get you through, you know, 3 days. You would have been in serious trouble. You need to be thinking like 2 weeks. White people, if I'm in an area with a lot of black people, white people might not come at all. So, I mean, what are we going to do if things go down? Water, got to have water. He continues, the water can be stored in the following containers. Displayed on this page, the Square Reliance 7-gallon lifeguard container can be easily tucked away in a closet. It cannot be stacked one on top of the other when filled up completely. If you have more space, you may consider a 55-gallon water barrel. With the accessories pictured available at www.nitro-pack.com. You will also need some accessories available at Nitro Pack to help you pump the water out and keep it fresh. If a barrel isn't for you, the next up would be an Aquaflex water storage mat. They can store up to 60 gallons of water and be tucked away under a large bed. I thought that was so crazy when I read that, like, wow. I mean, just imagine you can store 60 gallons of water under your bed. That's, man. This is available at www.aquaflex.net. Water is, I mean, incredibly important. You got to have water. You can go without food for a long time. Water, I think you got maybe 3 days. Maybe not even that, but I mean, water. The ship is going to sink real quick if you do not have water. So really look into that. Think about that. Even think about that right now. If something went down, you know, how much water do you have stored in your home? You know, could you make it a day if you didn't have access to water? Could you make it one? Because I know listeners out there who have told me white people have just showed up at their home and turned off the water. Folks have reported that to me. So it's not out of the realm of possibility. So just think about that. Do you even have enough water to last one day if something were to happen? Candles, matches. I mean, it's extensive. He also talks about filters. I'll read this one as well. So a particular type of filter he's discussing is an IPN. That would be the International Preparedness Network. This device is a IPN favorite because it can be used in a kitchen sink and out in the field. That's, to me, I'm pretty ignorant about this, but that seems kind of impressive that they have a water filter that you can use in the sink, and then you can take it off and, I guess, be out camping and use it there as well. This type of filter will remove all harmful bacteria, but you will need to use it in combination with another filter to remove bad-tasting sediment and VOC, and that's volatile organic compounds. Consider using a Brita tabletop filter to help improve the taste. To destroy most viruses, you will need to either boil your drinking water for a minimum of 3 minutes. Use a water disinfectant, bleach, hydrogen peroxide. I didn't know hydrogen peroxide could be used as a water disinfectant. That is constructive. Or if you can afford to spend a little extra cash, $130, you can purchase the battery-powered MIOX water purifier from MSR and use it to remove the viruses electronically. That is the information they have on water. They have emergency kits. Don't let that price throw you off. They have emergency kits that you can purchase. He has links to different sites that just have like flashlights, lighters, different tools, I think a compass, a pen, just different things that you can use that would be of constructive value, something sharp to cut things with. They have these kits put together, and he says, you know, you can assemble these emergency kits. You can put one together for like $25, really come in handy if you have to move something or if you need to take something apart or nails, screws, anything like that. Not talking tons of money. They have pricier ones. He also says, you know, you don't want to skimp. You want to get quality material that's going to save you. You know, think if things go down, you're in Katrina, you're in a situation where things have just gone really bad, you know, you want to have access to quality tools that you can rely on to get things done. So just keep that in mind. But you don't have to spend tons of money. He stresses that. Let's see. I want to pick out one more bit of information before I hit the phone lines. Transportation. I thought this was really, really interesting. It was just something that I hadn't thought of. In an emergency situation, if you have a vehicle, car or what have you, might not be operable. Roads might not be operable. You know, telephone poles could be down, you know, depending on the nature of the emergency. He talks about having a bike handy. I'm just reading. This is number 5, emergency transportation. When disasters strike, you need reliable, sturdy transportation. A car is sometimes useless due to traffic or even dangerous debris that can block roads. Outside of your feet, a good bicycle is the best way to move. The Montague Folding Paratrooper is the official bike of IPN. Not only is it as sturdy as a tank, it is lightweight, 28 pounds. And can be folded up and placed in a travel bag. If you want to bomb-proof your cycle, purchase air-free tires at airfreetires.com and heavy-duty clincher rims at worksman.com, and you will never have to worry about a flat tire or a bent wheel. And they have a photograph of this very sturdy bicycle. But I think it's just important things to think about. You know, everybody might not need one of these, you know, bomb-proofed bicycles, but, you know, definitely water, tools, maybe having a kit, a backpack kind of already packed with key things. I think definitely if you have children, this should be standard. I know any time that white people have given me permission to work with children, they go through a lot of codifying of how to deal with different emergencies. So definitely if you have a family, this is just standard. Like, these are things that should be done. Just going over if you have to leave quickly and do you have things set aside. I know at the previous employment that I've white people, when they have employed me to work with children, they had notebooks with information about all of the children, like medical conditions. One of the things that he talks about, make sure you know your blood type. I would think if you are a parent, know your children's blood type, any allergies, medic alert bracelets, those sort of things. So you have all that information ready to roll. Like, when emergencies, when bad things happen, that's when the awesomeness of white people really stands out. I mean, you really get to see the people who know what to do, who are codified, who know how to solve problems, and the people who are ignorant and don't really know too much. It really sticks out. And you want to be one of those people that, you know, things go down, you know what to do. You've already got things set up, and your children know what to do. When things go, I mean, it's already going to be stressful. You want to try to minimize that stress as much as possible by just knowing, at least, I know we got a flat. I don't have to worry about that. I know we got a calculator. I know we got maps already put away. I know we got, you know, at least 2 weeks worth of water and food, canned goods, dried stuff, all taken care of. You know, at least we got some minimums, change of clothes. Like, I mean, seriously, you know, already having that kind of thought out, even maybe some different places that you might go if you have to leave suddenly or if things go down, just things to think about. I mean, we are in a war. Racism, white supremacy is war, is terrorism. We are in a perpetual state of terrorism as non-white people, so we should behave accordingly. You know, they have fire. I mean, white people. White, I mean, just think about that. I'll rest on this and then I'll go to the phone lines. White people don't care about their children at all. I mean, white people do not place a high value on children. And I think just to look at that and try to get a gauge, look and think about maternity leave in this area of the world. And just gauge by maternity leave. Anybody out there who is a parent, if you're a mom and you've had maternity leave or your experience with maternity leave in this area of the world, would you conclude based on that experience and what you know about maternity leave that white people place a high value on children based on what you know about maternity leave? At any rate, white people will at minimum have fire drills with your children at school. At minimum, they'll have them on a pretty regular basis so that, you know, they've kind of codified what to do if a fire should break out at the school. Have you ever had a fire drill at your home? Ever?
I've had one at school before.
Have you had one at home?
I can't think of any right now.
I didn't either. I'm just saying, you know, we need to get our act together. I mean, I've heard a lot of folks say, you know, Katrina happened and I'm stunned, but that wasn't our wake up call to get our act together and survival and all that sort of thing. Out of all the people, that might be our question of the evening. Out of all the people that have said that, black people, how many of you have actually done something in the way that you live? So that if a Katrina should happen to you, bam, this is what I'm going to do. I already got certain things set up. How many people? That'll be our question. I'll go to the phone lines right now to get a response. Let's see. Person who dialed in. If you want to talk, you got to press 1 because it's, you know, a lot of people. And please keep the background noise down. If you're not talking, press mute. I'll go one by one since I have a question. Person who called in last 4 digits. 6232. Have you done anything in your home? First of all, I guess, do you have children? Yes or no? And then have you done anything to codify how you would deal with a disaster of some sort or major emergency? Last 4 digits, 6232.
No, I don't have children, but I have been storing food and learning more about disaster preparedness. And working on an emergency kit.
Okay. Outstanding. Outstanding. Good to hear. Good to hear. Let's see. Person who called in last 4 digits, 7012. Oops. 7012, same question. Number 1, do you have children? Yes, no. And then have you done anything to codify how you would deal with an emergency? 7012.
Good evening, Gus and Justice, and all other callers. No, I don't have kids, and Yes, I have started putting a kit together. I live in Louisiana, so I've experienced hurricanes. But yeah, I usually stock up on mostly water. And right now, I'm just trying to get more educated on how to handle, you know, food supplies and basically using, you know, nature to feed yourself. So, in the process.
Dig it. Dig that. Dig that. Person who called in from a blocked number. If you called in from a blocked number, same question. Do you have children, and have you done anything to codify dealing with some sort of emergency?
Hello?
Yes, sir. We can hear you.
Yes. Yes, I have stopped eating processed foods. I have a lot of nuts in my house, almonds. I definitely have an ionizer in my house with a filter. But I do need to stock up on a lot of other things in a disaster. But I'm coming around.
Good stuff, good stuff. Making progress, making progress. Person who called in. Oh, do you have children, sir?
Yes. One.
Have you, like, prepared, have you codified anything with your children, like what to do? You know, do they know to go, who to call, all that sort of thing? Have you codified anything with your children?
No, I haven't. That's a good one.
Okay. Let's see. Person who called in, last four digits, 5978. 5978. Same two questions. Do you have children, and have you done anything to codify how you would deal with an emergency situation? Ooh,
greetings,
I'm echoing.
Greetings, Gus.
Greetings, sir. I'm good.
This is King Simon. Yes, I've trained with ATOP for the last 13 years. And, you know, I have to commend that brother for doing what he has done. And from that point, I've been carrying my children to and educated them on survival by any and all means necessary. Up to this day, we conduct evacuation walks out of the city of New York to show people how to mitigate and navigate out of the city. Eitan has taught me about water purification and, of course, organic growing of food. And, you know, learned a lot with that brother. I heard him on your program, and I'm glad that he did get on your program. And right now, like you said, we are in a snowstorm in New York City. But I do encourage all those listening to your show to learn of the different disasters that may take place in your area, even if you study at least 100 years of what can happen and what can take place in your region of the part where you're located. Some people have floods, consistent floods, like he said, flash fires in certain parts of the area. New York, we have hurricanes, snowstorms, so we deal with that. And, you know, I do encourage everybody to get his book, Preparedness Now. Also, David Black has a good book called Life Off the Grid, or Living Off the Grid, and also another book called What to Do When Shit Hit the Fan. Excuse my language, but that's the name of the book. But A-Town book is a perfect book, excellent book, especially from a brother who's been doing it for 30 years. And when I first heard A-Town speak, that's when I just immediately understood that was necessary. Not only did I understand it, it's also that I was introduced to survival from the Nation of Islam under Honorable Elijah Muhammad. He also had taught his followers to have a survival kit. I actually have one of the old survival kit lists that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad told us and what to store. You must have an E-kit, which is an emergency kit that you carry with you at all times. It don't have to weigh no more than 5 pounds. It doesn't cost that much, like you were expressing earlier. Also, we have a 72-hour kit to a week kit where we keep next to our doors or keep next to our exits and entrance at our house in case the society or this place says that we have to evacuate the immediate area that we live in. It is very important that we have a 72-hour to a week kit, possibly 2 weeks, on how to actually use those things that's in the kit and to be able to navigate and get out of any threatened area, ground zero, whatever it may be. So I really commend Eitan for showing us the different things, like I said, purifying water. And he, like you said, he teaches a mechanism of his preparedness is called Aido, which is adaptation improvisation. So the more you know, the less you have to use, because now you learn how to improvise and adapt. Like we show, we learn how to rappel from buildings in case of high emergency. If we're in high rise buildings, how to rappel from buildings. He taught us all of that. He taught us how to adapt and improvise by making harnesses from electrical wire. I mean, Akon has gone into so much, and we actually conduct seminars anywhere people want us to be. All you have to do is contact us at readyforanything.org. That's his website. You can call us and find out the number. But I've been with him, King Simon, I've been with him for the last 13 to 14 years. And believe me, it is a life-changing experience when you learn to be self-sufficient in a time of disaster. And our motto in the disaster world is, it's better to be prepared when you're not in a situation than to be in a situation and not be prepared. So, Gus, I commend you and Justice for those questions that she asked. I really enjoyed them. And, I hope we work with each other in the future, my brother. Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you. That propelling down buildings, that sounds like people that are serious about war. I mean, that's, man, I would love to see. I think white people would hate that if you saw black people out training on how to propel down a man.
Yeah, brother. No, Aton goes in, brother. He really goes in, and he trains us in certain parks. You know, they actually shut down certain parks because he trained for so long. The police and certain law enforcement have actually shut down certain parks to stop us from training and started putting cameras in certain parks. Of course, that's white supremacy again, brother. You know how it is. They want control. They don't want us doing that kind of stuff. We light fires. He shows us how to make fires out of flint wood, flints, and out of wood, and how to do the whole lighting fire from dry wood. He shows us how to do all that. He found it really, really the real deal when it comes to that.
I'm definitely going to make it a priority to have him back on the show to share some more information. Folks will really. I was only sad he couldn't stay longer, but, you know, snowstorm, that's why I don't like being in the cold weather. I hate cold weather. Ugh.
I hate you.
Damn.
You know, you mentioned somebody like Sam Greenlee. I will get you his number. The guy who wrote The Spook That Stopped by the Door, a perfect movie, a great book on what we need to do to make things happen, to turn around this white supremacy. And like he said, you don't die unless you win. You don't fight. What you're going to fight, you're going to fight unless you win or you die. And exactly what the man said in the movie and in the book. So I'm going to get you that number to that brother. I think you would love that brother in a father interview. I think you'd love
him. I would love to do it. We're doing the broadcast every day for the remainder of the month. So anybody you would like to send, I was actually going to contact you today about Dr. Sevi and Dr. Africa. If you could, anything you could do to bring them along as well, I would be super grateful.
Well, Dr. Africa already said he will do your show. Actually, him and I are doing a seminar here in New York the 19th and the 20th. So anytime or probably before that in February, he'll be happy to do it. I already spoke to him, definitely. Dr. Sevi, he's always on the run, but I'm going to have him in New York around June. And then I'll make sure I get him because he's doing a workshop here in June. And whoever I got, brother, I always keep a media list with me, and I'll send you all the messages and let you know who I got, and I'll call you and make it happen.
Outstanding. I appreciate it, man. Outstanding. Great Sam Greenlee.
Great show. Hey, like I said, when you gonna get Justice, man? We need Justice to come and do a lecture. You and Justice to do a lecture. That's what we need.
This is, you know, on the line. She can let you know.
Justice.
Hello.
How are you, Justice?
I'm doing good.
I am so honored. You sound like my daughter, Brianna. Y'all sound exactly alike. So I really enjoy the questionings that you pose to the people that come on for the interviews, and I really enjoy it. I would like you and Gus one day probably to travel to New York and do a lecture, or just sit down in front of a panel of people and just do what you do as far as with the cows, Phil. You do what you do, man. I think that would be quite interesting. I think a lot of people would come out just to see someone of your age and his age doing what you're doing. And I know I would attract at least older and younger generations to come to something like that. I know that because I make things happen out here. Me and the Empress, we do what we have to do, and my other partners like Abundance Child and Aton, people like them, and Polite, and we really make things happen, and we would love. And matter of fact, Polite's children, 12 and 13-year-old, they writing books, and I know all of y'all sitting on the panel would be and getting questioned by the audience would be a great thing. If your parents would allow or come out with you, that would be beautiful. We're going to have to set a date for that.
That would be fun.
All right, I'm glad. Thank you, Justice.
Yeah, I'm down. Brother Polite, he'll be coming through later in the month, and we'll be making an effort to get his children on a separate program, not together, separate program, all to themselves as well. So just stay tuned. That's coming down the pike.
I got you, Brother Gus. We got you. We got you. No, I love what you're doing. Believe me. I love what you're doing. And believe me, there's not a lot of shows like you that's doing it. And I'm happy that you're doing the work. I'm happy like you're doing the work. That's all I'm happy.
I appreciate it, man, and thank you for the assistance. King Simon was very helpful in getting Mr. Edwards on the program today. So thank you for the assistance and great program. I really enjoyed hearing him. And website is great too. It was great just getting the information. The website again is readyforanything.org. readyforanything.org, or you can just click the link if you're listening at Blog Talk Radio.
Right. And we still need help with that life straw. We are definitely sending a million of straws down to Haiti because it's hitting Jamaica also, brother. It's hitting Jamaica. It's hitting the Dominican Republic. So by any means, it's going to start spreading if we don't jump on top of this immediately. So I'm with the whole movement. I'm with the whole movement. Whatever to do to help us to be self-sufficient and to help us people to purify our water and learn and teach our people how to be self-sufficient, like Marcus Garvey taught, like the Honorable Elijah Muhammad taught, like these various leaders of the past taught. Let's go in. Let's do it. Let's stop playing. Let's stop playing, please. Please let your audience, let's stop playing. White supremacy is real in all aspects, in all levels. It's real. But sometimes if we put our monies together and do what we have to do, put our minds together, we can turn this over in at least a year and make it happen. Like the program of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, he used to say, you know, just give him $10 and he'll show you what he can build. And he did do a great job and have his farms and all kinds of stuff that he did. People cannot negate that fact. And, and people like him and people like Aton, who's uncle was in the Nation of Islam, so I know where Aton getting a lot of his stuff from, the survival, and his father, who was a former military person. Believe me, and my father, who was a former military person, I learned a lot from my family and all that was in the military. But I chose not to join any military because I wasn't fighting for these white folks at all. Simple as that. So, it's real.
Logical decision. Logical decision.
Yeah, they tried to send me into 16.
And to most likely harm other non-white people, most likely. That's pretty much what you're going to be looking at when you are fighting in the army of racism, white supremacy. King Simon, can you hang on the line? I just want to add the other two folks that called
in. No problem.
Because I actually want to hear about that evacuation walk. I mean, that sounds like codification. So,
yeah.
The other two folks that called in, one of you is at a blocks number, and one of you is last four digits, 1517. Your lines are open, and everybody that called with a hand up, your lines open. If we could keep the background noise down, that would be super helpful. I just want to get the other two people on the question. Last four digits, 1517, do you have children, and have you done anything to codify how you respond to an emergency situation?
This is me, Gus. Yes, I have children, and no, I'm partially there, but not complete. I've been working on a survival kit for many years, but I have not gotten it to where I need it to be. I've got plenty of water. We love water. We're water drinkers over here, so that's it.
Okay. Appreciate it. Making progress. I appreciate that. Always good to hear from Mr. Sen Q, a.k.a. Dr. Muhammad. Good to hear. Good to hear from him. Mr. Nero, I got your line as well. Mr. Nero, your line is open as well. I got you. The person who called in from a block number, last person that had a hand up from a block number, do you have children? Have you codified how you respond to an emergency situation?
Greetings.
Oh, I heard two people. I guess I'll go females first. The female that just responded, do you have children? How do you respond?
Greetings to you, Gus, and to 909. I believe that was him. I do apologize for cutting in on your time, 909. But I have my children. They are grown, and unfortunately, I'm not properly prepared listening to everything that was being said. But I do have a backdoor policy. I do have family that lives. My father is from the Caribbean, and we do have places down there. So in the event of a disaster, I can always escape the United States and go back down that way. So that's my only means of escape. But unfortunately, no, I'm not as prepared as the caller before who was laying out his plan.
909.
Greetings. No children. And, I have some codified, basically just what to eat and what to drink. So, yeah, definitely.
Okay. Mr. Nero, if you're there, if you wanted to respond.
This is Mr. Nero. Greetings. Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Man, I'm in trouble. You know, I was good back in 01. From like 01 to 05, I was pretty good on water. And at the time, I was dealing with canned goods. So I had water and canned goods and some other non-perishables. But time got hard. I ate it. So I need to get back to, at least at the level I was at before,
It's a good gauge, I failed too. I do not pass this test. It sounds like King Simon and a few others, it sounds like we have a lot of room for improvement, all of us.
Yes.
Which we pretty much thought was the case. I mean, I didn't think we had made that much progress.
Gus?
Yes, ma'am.
Can I share something? Another thing that I've started doing was, because Monsanto, this company, is trying to basically hybridize most of the seeds and things like that, control what we eat. What I started doing was when I have, bell peppers or any fruits or vegetables that have seeds in them, what I've been doing is taking the seeds out, and I'll get, those little plastic containers with lids that you use, say for the salsa at El Pollo Loco or somewhere like that, or even Ziploc bags. I'll take the seeds out of the bell peppers and other things like that. You can find people on YouTube that will show you how to do it. So that if there's ever a situation where I need seed, instead of just eating them, and then they go to waste or throwing them in the trash can, I already have seeds from the food I'm buying so that I can grow more.
Correct.
And I wanted to share this info with you all. If you wanted to get your own seeds, there's a website called gardeninacan.com, GardenInacan.com. You can get 16 non-hybrid seeds, or 16 varieties, of non-hybrid seeds. It's enough seed in there to supply over a half acre of vegetables. At the time I took the information down, it was $69, and the number was 866-598-7396. And I think there's another website you can go to called foodshortageusa.com, where you can also find seeds in cans. And I would just say, whether white people make a law or not about growing food in your yard, you better figure out what kind of food you need to eat and grow it if you have to so you don't die. I saw some program out here with the family, and it may be the same people the guest talked about in Pasadena. Now, they were growing food in their front yard, but it wasn't necessarily like fruit trees. They were things you normally would look at and think they were shrubs or flowers, but everything they chose to put was edible. And it showed how they would even take the flowers and things growing in their garden and make salads with all of the stuff. So it didn't necessarily look like, you know, a farm in the front, but they made a conscious decision to put everything that they planted in that front yard was absolutely edible. If it wasn't edible, they didn't waste time or space growing it.
Dig that. The person who called in, 8162, your line is open. Before anybody responds to 818's comments, I just wanted to get the other response to the question in. Do you have children? Have you codified how you would respond to an emergency situation? Last four digits, 8162.
Greetings, everyone. Yes, I have children, but they're not in the home, but before they're grown up. And my consciousness was raised about this years ago before they left the home. So I spent a lot of time speaking with my son and now my grandchild about, in the event something catastrophic should happen, where we would meet up and within what time and what the alternative plan would be. I've also bought land and a boat to have some place to go. I have stores of water and bicycles, and yeah, I feel prepared to take action. I've also signed up for martial arts class as well as the gun range to learn firearm usage.
Outstanding. Outstanding. That should be mandatory for black people. Firearms training, going to the gun range, that should be mandatory for black people 2011. Mandatory.
Agreed. Can I be here?
True.
Yes, you can.
Okay. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm having phone problems over here on my end. You know, unfortunately, I'm in California, and I know CNQ is as well, Dr. Muhammad. And so we get so many nice days here, and, you know, we'll see the rest of the country just suffering, you know, with the cold weather and everything. So, you know, so we kind of get lulled into thinking it's just nothing's going to happen except for an earthquake every 10 years or so, you know. But I do remember, you know, being in the last
right
big
now.
Earthquake. It is a little cold right now, but, you know, it's not as cold as it is back east. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, I'm sitting in the car. I don't have a jacket on. And it's raining. But it's not that cold. So, you know, I'm just saying,
right,
you know, that is kind of,
we
got to worry about the earthquake, but it kind of lulls you into just being very complacent about it. So I got to get serious about it.
You know what else could happen, Mr. Nero? Recently in Victorville, somehow they ended up with fuel from a rocket or something in the water supply out in Barstow, and nobody could use any of the water. So all the people were stuck waiting on them to bring water to them from Victorville or something. And when they did, they were only giving out 1 gallon of water per family. So if these people had done this right out in California, they would have been in a better position. So it could be anything.
I agree. It can be. And that's why I said we get lulled into, you know, we get so many sunny days here. That's, you know, it just kind of lulls you into being complacent.
And Mr. Nero, I'd invest in a gas mask out there by you.
Agreed.
The person who called in 7908, your line is open as well. Thank you, everybody. We're doing an excellent job keeping the volume background noise down. Thank you. And again, if you're not speaking, if you could use your mute button, that would be very helpful. Excellent job. 7908, do you have children? And have you codified how you would respond to an emergency situation?
Yes, I have children. somewhat codified. Not as much as I would like. I'm definitely, you know, good for a month. I'm trying to work my way up to a year. I was in Katrina. I mean, I left, you know, before Katrina hit. I was prepared to leave. But one thing that I will just share is that I also keep some form of cash, some system of bartering in terms of if cash is no longer any good. Black people in particular have a, you know, we have a tendency not to buy a lot of rounds. We go and buy one box of bullets for our guns. You know, that those things may be used as a form of exchange. Also, at this stage, if you're taking self-defense, I would suggest that most people take those things that gives you the foundations of self-defense versus, you know, taking, and no disrespect to those classes that, you know, take you through the belts and things of that nature. But you certainly want to do something that's going to give you something you can use today. And a lot of martial arts institutions.
Yeah, geared toward tournaments.
Sir?
A lot of the martial arts are geared toward tournaments. They're geared toward teaching you how to win a tournament, but not how to win
realistic.
An actual fight.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of martial artists get their butts whooped by a guy who could just handle himself pretty good. But, I mean, this is a great show. I'm glad you had it. It was on my mind to mention it to you and send you an email about it, man, because this is important for us. We have to divest ourselves as much from the society as we can. Being in Katrina, man, I'm telling you right now, when the bank shut down and I had funds in my pocket, because something I always did is prepare, but not having access to my account, to my payroll. That was a serious wake up call for me, and we're becoming so dependent on electronics and direct deposit, and using our debit cards and things of that nature. That was a very vulnerable position to be in, where you did not know what if your bank account even existed anymore, because the banks were closed as well. Everything was destroyed. Fortunately, they had some backup systems, but we just have to be really smart about what we're doing. Everybody has said some great things. I would suggest we start buying seeds as well before Monsanto's, you know, does eventually get to this patent on seeds, and particularly corn seeds, because I think that's the number one seed that he's trying to, or that particular company is trying to get the patent on, because that is, I believe, one of the essential seeds for just about everything, which is the corn oil or corn seed oil, however they say it. But start buying gallons of seeds. Start buying ammunition. You know, have those things for your weapon, because those may be tools of bartering. And also, when you store your water, get glass containers, because if you keep it in plastic for a extended period of time, then you have the chemicals from the plastic that gets into the water that also can be damaging to your health. But just a great, great show. And I am codifying my son and on the things he needs to know and do and in my absence, just in case I'm not here for whatever reason. And he has to, you know, step up and be the leader in the family.
That's right.
And start buying gold. Because paper money is going to be useless.
Silver and gold.
Start buying precious metals.
Mm-hmm. Including copper as well. And just so you all know, the pennies put out now don't have any copper in them. They're made out of zinc. But you can go back to any pennies minted, I think it's 1981 and before, and they should have copper in them. So a friend that I know, this is what he's doing. He's going and taking all of his, you know, loose change. He'll sift through for those kind of pennies. But he goes to the change machine, dumps all his change in there, then gets dollar bills out, goes and gets $20 worth of penny rolls, takes his magnifying glass, goes home, looks for those pennies that have copper in them, separates them out, takes the rest back, and, you know, will do the same thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's one more.
Well, I just wanted to add real quick before you get off the subs. Well, I guess it kind of did get off the subject of ammunition, but I do remember some time ago, it might be good, too, because ammunition can get expensive, to learn how to make your ammunition. I've seen it done. I don't know how the process works, but I'm pretty sure with the Internet you can find it to make your own ammunition. It's not that complicated. It's kind of simple.
Gus, I have questions for – I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, I just was speaking on the ammunition. That's good what you said because, you know, people throw away their shells, and, you know, and those shells can be reused. So, yeah, all you just need is a press and gunpowder, and you can melt.
And it's love.
Yeah, man, that's – I just wanted to speak on that. You know, don't throw away your shells if you don't throw away your shells.
So that seems a little hazardous.
No, it's not hazardous, Miro. You're just pressing the projectile into the cartridge. So that process doesn't and you can refire it with heat. So I mean, it's not dangerous. The process
just double check.
Is not dangerous.
Okay, I had to double check on that one.
Same Q, what did you say?
I said shooting is hazardous. I said, if you're going to deal with a gun,
mm-hmm.
You're already messing around with a hazard. So, you know, taking it a step further to make your own ammunition is not going to be any more dangerous than handling a gun.
But my issue was the bullet is never pointed at me. So, I mean, you know, it just seems like making ammunition, that bullet is pointed straight up at you. That's the reason why I said, that seemed a little hazardous.
Oh, yeah, no, actually, when you make it, no, so... Just to get more detail, I'm sorry because I know the sister wanted to speak, but real quick, so where I seen it happen, that my dad used to make it, and we collect all the shells at the range, and then you had this machine. It's like a device, but the bullet points up. So it's like a little device. You put the shell in there, you put the gunpowder in there, and then you put the slug that goes inside. It's inside of the top part of the device, and it has like a little wheel that you kind of turn, and it lowers that shell in that slug inside the shell, and then you kind of just press down on it a little bit, but it's not dangerous at all. There's a little thing in the bottom where you put the primer. It's like a little round thing that goes into the back of the bullet that ignites it. That you put that in there, but the only way that would happen for it to ignite was, you know, you'd have to have some kind of hammer that slams it. It doesn't do that in this device. The device is set up for it to be safe. I think the only dangerous part is knowing the exact amount. You got to know the precise amount of gunpowder that you're going to put inside the bullet. But all of that is, you know, all of that is available. All that information is available. They tell you, you know, the amount. You know, it's in measurements. You know what I mean? I mean, white folks, you know, they're very complicated with all that stuff. They, you know, they're precise with that stuff. Not all of them, just the smart and powerful ones. So, all right, what's sister got to say? Oh.
Well, that's good information about the making my own bullets. I mean, I'm going to look into that, too.
Yeah, I am, because ammunition is expensive. I'm sorry, just go ahead.
I had some questions to the speaker. Is the brother on who has worked with Mr. Edwards for years?
Yes, I'm still here.
I'm very interested in the life straw and some information about that. And I can see on the website that the company is based in Switzerland.
That's correct.
And have you seen one of the actual life straw?
Oh yes, ma'am, I have. Matter of fact, we did a press conference in New York City at the City Hall. We had a few of them with us. And
is it plastic?
No, it's actually made like a flute type substance that has a filtering system in there, but it's not. It's like a plastic mixed with something else within it, with a filtration system for the bacteria and all that stuff, and it's easy to clean out and all that stuff. But it's it's quite a lightweight thing, like it's like fiberglass mixed with plastic. Very interesting that they came up with stuff. So, we already have, like, I think. Go ahead.
Is it biodegradable?
Yes.
It is. And yes. Is Mr. Edwards a distributor? I see on the website that you can buy in and become a distributor.
Well, as far as a distributor, what we're doing, we just set up a connection with the Life Straw, the people that make it, so we can actually send it, distribute it only to Haiti so far. That's why. That's what that really, that whole lifestraw.org, that's what's for Haiti. I really haven't gotten it for myself yet. I have the Katahdin water filter that Gus spoke about earlier, but
mm-hmm.
I haven't used that filter per se myself, no. But I know Eitan has. He has a personal one.
And I'm interested in knowing about how many of these life straws. Is your what is the goal? How many of these life straws are needed for Haiti?
Oh, if you're looking on the website, we are going for the goal of 1 million life straws to send down to Haiti. Right now, there's probably approximately 30,000 life straws down there from other entities, but we, as our entity, we want to send 1 million down there because it's really because, of course, we're non-white folks and we want to do what we have to do. But there's
okay.
other people that's working with us also that's helping us to, you know, filter it in Haiti without it, you know, without it being compromised by any, you know, thugs or people that might want to just take it just to sell it. You know, we don't want that going on.
Are you working with any Haitians here in America?
Yes, we are here in New York. As a matter of fact, there's a Haitian organization called Community to Community is actually supposed to be doing something in Apollo tomorrow, but due to this blizzard that we're having, we might not be able. But we are connected with all the Haitian community out here. Myself, I'm from Jamaica. My family's from Jamaica and Cuba. So, you know, being that it's starting to reach certain islands, I'm definitely always down with helping whatever's going on in our community here and abroad. And, yeah, we're working with the radio stations here in New York, the Haitian radio station, Radio Soleil. And we worked with Wyclef, but he's been going through some stuff since they probed into his life. You know how it is.
Yeah.
And, he's a good friend of Eitan also. So
I have a question for you there. Are they doing anything to get seeds to people in Haiti so they can grow their own food as well? Because I heard there's a lot of malnutrition going on there right now.
Yeah, well, the only reason that we haven't focused on the seed is because water right now is so much more important to clean it because of those soldiers from Nepal that came and started spreading it. You know, a lot
right.
of people don't know. You know, so right now we've been focusing on the water. That's a good next step to go into because they should, as a Caribbean island, they should have access to different seeds themselves. Just
yeah,
like
I was just asking because I know there's a problem with food mm-hmm. and. To me, it just makes sense to do that as well so that they don't go hungry and so they don't have to wait on the UN who's stocking up food but not distributing it.
Well, that's what the self-sufficient plan is so important. That's why, you know, Eitan has been doing this for so years. I mean, people took the plan that Cuba had. As much as people disregard Cuba as whatever it is, a communist, whatever, This man has took all these people, made them literate. They're 98% literate in Cuba, not illiterate. You got people graduating. He got graduating doctors and community, and he has his autonomous farms and all kinds of stuff, sharing the food. I mean, they got their bad and their good everywhere, but if we learn to do for ourselves instead of depending on these people, Haiti could do it too. Haiti was the stronghold. Matter of fact, Haiti is the stronghold, and they're trying to get into Haiti and reap all the copper and the gold that's in there right now. They're just trying to destroy that place because of what they did to France and what they did to all these people. If they, by rights, were supposed to protect their country. That was by right. 200 years ago, they were supposed to do it. So if all of us can put in to help them and also help ourselves, like Eitan stressed earlier, you know, it would be beneficial, even if it's just a few of us, because everybody not coming. I know this. If you've seen the movie 300, it took 300 people. It took 300 just to scare a million people. So, I mean, we're just going to have to do what we have to do to make this happen and start spreading the word amongst our family and start having our own land and doing what we have to do. And then And also in the meantime, we also do what we got to do for the strongholds like Haiti and Africa and all these other things. But right now, I think Eitan mentioned that China is eating up Africa like crazy. Right now, China, you might as well say Africa is going to be China in another couple of 20 years. That will be China. We don't have a problem with that.
Does Eitan have, is he a pilot or a, or have a boat? Any kind of, are you in control of the actual delivery? Or
yes,
is that dependent
matter of fact,
on
we,
someone else?
Matter of fact, we work with, if you look on the website, we work with Elena, who is works for the orphanage organization that actually has access to a few of the boats, the people that are going down there. Play. He is a pilot, Eitan, yes, he is a pilot. He is a certified licensed pilot, but he don't have time to fly down there. Right now we have people on the ground from the Brooklyn Ambulance Corps, they're down there. They're part of our team also that's been helping out. So we have people that's trickled in from our groups that's been down there since the disaster, since last year. So we've been working in and out. It's just sometimes you have to – it's just like any other place. If you don't know it, you're going to have to get to know the communities, get to know the leaders in certain areas, the church leaders and all that, and try to funnel all this stuff through where all the people like to go. 80% of the country is under Christian rule or Christian dominance. So we got to go through the churches and try to get to some of them, to get into their communities where they're actually going to go. The people are still going to church regardless, even if they're going through sickness, they're going through that kind of stuff. They're doing that kind of thing down there. So we have to work through all the various organizations as much as we can. Is there going to be any misdoings and misdealings? Yes, it's going to be. We don't know how deep it is. With as far as the corruption, but what we have to do is keep on trickling more of our people in there to see that the life jaws get to where it's supposed to get and supervise. I mean, we got some people out there that's doing it right now. We're just working as hard as we can up here to get those million straws out there to hate. That's our real goal.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Well, check out our website, lifestrawnow.org.
I did want to suggest one more thing, too. I think it's good for us to learn how to fish and to have some collapsible fishing poles if you can, you know, if it's
right.
An emergency and you have to leave your local area. But teach your children how to fish is a good family bonding moment, but it's a survival skill, too.
That is true. Also, if you want to get some great sturdy boats, we recommend seaeagle.org, or .com, pardon me. So we tend to have an account with them, and a lot of us try to buy these inflatable boats that are very durable, and they deal with canoes and different types of boats. And I know that's very important for those that live near rivers or lakes or seas, you know, those type of things. And also, I implore everybody to learn community CPR, learn of course the basic swimming, learn how to saving people through swimming and swimming classes at your Red Cross or at any community center that you're. I said learn now. And to the sister that said she was going back to the Caribbean, I want to stress this to you. Once there's a disaster, depending on where you are, all airports will be compromised. All transportation, you will not be able to get out of America that quickly. So either you're going to plan on leaving now to get out of America and set yourself up to wherever you may come from, Barbados, Jamaica, Trinidad, set yourself up in Trinidad right now. But when disaster strikes, if it's a nuclear disaster, all airports will be shut down. Nothing's leaving America. Simple as that. That is the protocol, especially with Homeland Security and everything implemented now.
Homeland Security.
Yes, I heard that on your show before, too, sir. I won't even talk about it.
If I can be heard, I'm the sister that was speaking of. Once my son graduated from college about 3 years ago, he had some friends of his that graduated from college with him, and they were from Central America, Guatemala, I believe, somewhere around that area they were from. And the parents drove up for the college graduation. So there are a way that we are still connected to South America, and you can still drive from the United States to go down to these other regions. So if there's a way for you to escape, you can still do that.
Well, no, now if you're talking about South America, no, definitely, you're definitely connected. We're definitely connected to that. But I'm talking about people that live in the Caribbean. A lot of people say that in the Caribbean, say they're going to fly out and try to get away. That's not going to happen if you live in the Caribbean.
They're going to block you. They're going to block you at the border, too. I mean, if you know some kind of river that you can swim across or whatever, and they're not, I mean, they patrol. You know, right now, they're building a wall. I mean, a huge wall. I know where California, Arizona, Nevada, and Texas all border Mexico, they're building a huge, gigantic brick wall. It's thick. It's, you know, it's got barbed wire at the top. It's got cameras. They got patrols. They got the military patrols. They're not going to let anybody out or in at some point when they're ready.
Homeland Security will likely be intimately involved with that, too.
That's right.
Homeland Security will likely be intimately involved with endeavors like that.
They're going to be. That's their jurisdiction. There is no more. You know, Border Patrol. That comes under Homeland Security now. So that's them.
They actually are doing it because I saw Janet Napolitano on some talk show. And they were asking her, well, what is Homeland Security doing? And she was saying, well, actively right now, the borders are more secure than they've ever been, and we're building walls. And so, yeah, Homeland Security is doing it right now.
Incidentally, too, August, that guy that you mentioned, I can't think of his name, but I heard when I heard you mention his actual name, I Googled it. And he does work for Homeland Security, but he's listed as the small business liaison for Homeland Security. So I don't know, you know, if that was any constructive information for anyone, but
Gus.
I'm sorry.
Still there, Gus?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
There's a brother that I would like to also get on your show that will can actually break down where all this stemmed from the King Alfred plan of the 1500s to Intercaterra to Rex 84. All these are undercover names or changed over names from since the King Alfred plan on what Rome been wanting to do for a long time. Where it all stemmed from, white supremacy. It's all that, especially that Homeland Security stuff. Brother. It's all, you know, the names and faces may change, but the game is still the same. Same way. From King Alfred. Back in those days, and I think you would enjoy that brother on your show. His name is Taj Tariq Bey. You definitely enjoy that brother on your show.
Sure, let's do it. We're doing shows every day this month, so we have time to chat.
Okay, no problem. You wanted to ask about the evacuation walk?
Yes, sir.
What is it that would you like to know, brother? What would you like to know?
Just if you. I guess for folks who are not familiar with New York, if you can explain what it is, how did it get organized? Do your children, have they participated in this?
Yes, definitely. Well, I've been doing the evacuation walk for 13 years. As like I mentioned, I was with Eitan. I studied under Eitan for 13 years. And what we do is map out the various directions on how to get to the mainland. Mainland if a disaster strikes. Now, of course, in just like you were speaking about fire drills, those are drills that we do. We walk through Brooklyn, Manhattan to get to Bronx because Bronx is the place that is connected to the mainland. Anyone in various territories, you have to know the territory in every direction. When you're in wherever territory you might be in right now, I don't care if you're in L.A., I don't care if you're in Massachusetts, I don't care wherever you are, you have to know your territory, that when disaster strikes, if you know disaster has hit east, you better know where you're going west. And then if you know it hit north, you better know where you're going south. So what we do, we conduct a evacuation walk at least once to twice a year with a group of adults and children to walk the 20 to 30 miles outside or towards the outside of the city. Away from the disaster or the ground zero area, or just in case we was told by, you know, government officials that we had to evacuate from any prospective area, we would definitely use those different various routes that Aton has showed us to get out of the city. Just in case one is compromised, we use another one. If that one is compromised, we have three more that we can use to get out of the city. And that's what we try to instruct many people on how to do it. It's an endurance thing also, because what happened, walking is a form of a passive workout. I actually walk all the time. I walk every day because not only am I a promoter with flyers and online and all that, but my flyer route takes me all throughout Brooklyn, walking from different neighborhoods to different neighborhoods. I have walked from Brooklyn to the Bronx numerous amount of time. I've walked from Bronx to Brooklyn just to keep a certain workout and keep myself not comfortable with just driving and all that. I try to maintain. I have a very great physique as far as walking and helping me, and my family is just a bunch of walkers from Jamaica all the way over here. But I suggest everyone, if you don't want to walk, get a bicycle, ride it, and practice these routes at least once a month or once every 6 months. Practice an evacuation walk with you and your family, those who you care about. Practice evacuation walk. Like I said, it's best to be prepared for a situation and not be in one than to be in a situation and not be prepared. Always practice that kind of stuff so at least it can be ingrained in your mind what to do. Because what happened, fear does come during times of emergency, but fear can be harnessed and put into a cool mind, and you can operate the way you're supposed to operate in a more precise, concise manner, and also getting to where you have to go at dealing with whatever might come. Ready, being ready for anything. That's why Aton even formed an organization like that, readyforanything.org. Learn how to adapt, learn how to improvise. I say this because a lot of people don't even know how to do, a lot of people don't know how to walk, can't even walk two blocks. You got people that are overweight, and what we try to stress in our classes, we say, look, if you can't even do 20 jumping jacks, you got a problem. If you can't do 20 push-ups, you got a problem. Because suppose you had to pull one of your family members up from a disaster, and you can't even pull that person up. Because you can't even handle your own body weight. So the obesity rates that's happening in America, and of course the gluttony that's happening in America, is very appalling to myself and in the survival community. So I tell people, work out passively. You don't have to go into some big gym and spend all kinds of money. The floor in your living room starts off. You start with the floor in your living room with a few little exercises. Even breathing techniques. Take Tai Chi. Do something. Because even Tai Chi, I've been practicing those type of breathing techniques for the last year, and I haven't had to do a sit-up or a crunches yet. I still maintain my abdominals through breathing techniques because basically that's all when you do these type of things. You're breathing in and out. So it's very imperative if you're going to take on such a basic survival in your life, you have to have good health. That's why in Aton's book he has the three max system where he shows you how to work out, gives you the basics of working out and the importance of maintaining your health, maintaining your body holistically or the other way, because in times of disaster, a lot of things you ain't going to be able to get holistically. But what we do in New York, we do a thing called the nature walk. We show you what you can eat around the parks, around the buildings, a little grass, little dandelions. Dandelions is alkaline. Dandelions is a food that can be eaten. Certain plants and certain flowers out there, if you know how to identify with them in certain parks or around certain cemeteries, they can be eaten, and they can sustain you also with the water content in those flowers or in those plants. So it's very important that you learn. So even when we do the emergency walk, we look for plants. We look for things that we can also eat and gather just in case of any type of emergency. Well, we do this like a real fire drill, Dustin. That's what I'm trying to let people know. They can go to our website, readyforanything.org. We have a team in all the 50 states. So if you want to be trained by anybody in the 50 states or 51 states, whoever they added nowadays, but you can actually go and check us out, and we'll definitely let you know who you can go to in your prospective territory.
Outstanding. Outstanding. King Simon, appreciate the information. I am conserving energy today since we did 4 hours yesterday, and we'll be back tomorrow at Hang on 1 second, sir. Since we're going to be back tomorrow at 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, and 4 p.m. Pacific. So we're going to go like 5 minutes and wrap things up before we do the last 5 minutes. The article I was attempting to find yesterday that I couldn't, that I knew it was of interest, leader of UK pedophile ring may spend rest of life behind bars. I posted the article on the Cows radio page that I allegedly don't ever post anything on. So I'm not going to read it. You all can go there and read it, but I thought it was interesting. From the land of Mr. Peter Tatchell. Also, I had a listener, since I told folks, you know, you could suggest topics for shows, since we'll have a lot of programs this month, topics, guests, you know, what have you. I had a listener, an investor before, had asked about a program dealing with college students, non-white folks who are in colleges, universities, and how to deal with racism, white supremacy in those environments, mistreatment from professors, dealing with other students. Several folks had asked, and I had another person email, so I think we have enough people to do a program around that. I'm thinking this Saturday we could do that program, like this Saturday, 8 p.m., I'm thinking. If you all have a better time, please let me know. You can shoot me an email, untiljustice@gmail.com. But I'm thinking that sounds constructive. We could do that Saturday. That would be Saturday, January the 15th at 8 p.m. Eastern, 5 Pacific. We could do the program around students, if that will work for everyone. Just let me know. That'll do it. The gentleman that said he had a question, we'll start the 5 minutes now. The gentleman that said he had a question for King Simon, go right ahead. Okay. Whoever it was that had the question for King Simon, did we
yes,
lose him?
Yes, sir. Yes,
oh, okay.
Can I be heard?
Yes, sir.
Yes, I had a question about vertical farming. I heard that's going to be the new thing in New York, and I didn't hear too much of that tonight, but actually growing the vegetables, fruits vertically. And once I think I heard Dr. Sabi say it on a program in New York, probably I think it was last year. But do you know anything about that?
Well, I hosted that show, that event with Dr. Sabi. Yes, he did mention it, but he didn't go into any detail about it. That's one thing. I didn't get too much detail about it. I'm waiting for him to come back here in June. We're going to do an actual workshop with Dr. Sabi, an actual workshop where he's going to show you how to do the combining of herbs and all that. So he'll be back in June, hopefully June 19th in New York City to do a real workshop finally instead of lectures. He don't want to do any more lectures. So I heard that he mentioned vertical farming, but I don't know. He didn't give us the gist of it. He didn't give us too much information because, you know, people started asking more questions. Sorry.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Does anyone on the line have information about what a job description is legally? That was a question a listener asked. If anyone had information on what a job description is legally.
They can actually, if they want to take this email down, I know someone who can explain that to them via email. But can I give out the email?
Sure.
Okay. They can go because, matter of fact, our name is Abundance, ABUNDANCE, Child, CHILD@gmail.com. And just tell them that that person who's inquiring about that, just tell them that King Simon gave you the email. And then ask the question. Because he works for that. He knows that the meaning, the legal meaning of the job description. She's quite fluent in that.
Outstanding. Thank you, sir.
Yeah,
is that in the context of the Homeland Security person, employee? Is that question in the context of the Homeland Security employee?
No.
I don't think so.
Oh. Where'd that come from? Did I miss something?
It was totally unrelated to anything we've been talking about. It was just me attempting to look out for Victor, who had a problem, and I told her I would see if I could help her in solving her problem.
Okay, thank you. Wow.
Left field, that's all. That's great. I love left field questions.
Good show, very constructive. Thanks everyone, for sharing.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Thank all of you.
Could I admonish us all to learn to start eating less now?
Yes.
To condition our bodies. One meal a day, no more than two.
Yes.
Particularly with our children, if you have children, begin the process of conditioning them, because their minds need to be wrapped around that concept of eating less should a catastrophe happen. So I just wanted to throw that last little tidbit out, that we should start learning to eat, or start conditioning our bodies and minds to not eat as often as we sometimes do.
That's one thing I've learned about black people. That's the first thing. It's hard to get them to stop eating the blood and starch. That's the hardest thing. You can tell them to quit, you know, stop doing that. That can start a riot in some areas. So be very careful in your approach when you talk about stop eating certain things, because they'll turn on you quick.
909, I just needed information. 909, do you recall the black female? She's an artist. She does the portraits that are, I guess, about racism, ostensibly, and white people really enjoy her work, like you were telling me about her before, and I forgot her name.
Yeah, I'll send you an email about her. I think
Thank
it's, yeah. Oh, and I wanted to say all flowers that have five petals are edible. So that's a quick way to tell. Count the petals. Five, you can eat it.
Thank you. Sorry. Yeah, I was supposed to say that. I'm sorry, but thank you very much, brother. Thank you.
Is that it? The person 1517, your line is open, 1517. Is that it? Did anybody have anything else they needed to share, or are we good?
I wanted to say the one meal a day is definite. And you know, once you start it, you'll see that your body is. You can train your body to be hungry only at this, like. When you start eating one meal a day, if you eat that one meal at the same time every day, like between How to Eat to Live says between the hours of 4 and 6, you won't get hungry until that time. You train your stomach pretty soon. It'll just get hungry around that time. That was a very good suggestion, and it's also good. It will come in handy in case you do have to survive. You know, you get into a situation where you got very little food. It will come in handy because your body has already been trained not to eat much. That's it. Thanks.
Thank you very much for that information. Yeah, the How to Eat to Live is a great book to start anybody who's getting into that. Dr. Sabi was a part of the Nation of Islam, and he commends the Honorable Elijah Muhammad for what he did. People just have to, you know, stay on that course, that one meal a day. Try to drink water, or just eat one meal a day, and then eat one meal every other day. Practice all of that. That's what I've been practicing for years. And that has helped me immensely. You know.
If I can add one other thing that you were saying, I believe 818 was mentioning about collecting seeds and food.
Mm-hmm.
Corn, for instance, a lot of the corn that we have here, it's their hybrid. They're not the original corn that was grown, and you might want to contact a lot of the Native Americans close to their reservations. They might have more of the correct product that has not been tampered with, that you might be able to get to grow rather than using what is currently out here, because a lot of these, what's out here in the market, is not good for the body.
There's organic seed catalogs that you can get for free. And have sent to you, And now's a real good time to order your seed catalog so that you can start picking up your seeds.
Hey, Gus. Her name is I Could Kill Two Birds with One Stone. I could save time, man. If anybody else wanted to look her up, I could just say it over the air. Her name is Kara Walker. K-A-R-A Walker.
Much obliged. Thank you, sir.
Yes, sir.
Kara Walker.
Did she y'all should check out
black
her artwork.
I'm sorry.
Well, I was just saying she does. You all should check her out. Please continue. Make it quick, though.
I think she had an exhibit here in my neck of the woods, and it was something kind of powerful. I'm pulling her.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, I have the sister's book. Definitely check her out. My lover, my oppressor.
I have a question for King Simon. Is he still on?
Yes, I am, sir.
Sir, let me ask you, do you have any pilots in your organization?
Yes, Aton is a pilot himself, but he knows a few of the pilots that are friends of his right now. But we're always looking for more. My son is actually about to go into college for aviation himself. So we're definitely encouraging him, and we're trying to help him out. Aton is trying to help him out with references because he don't want to go into the Air Force. Definitely not. I don't want him to go into the Air Force, but he's not going. So we're working on more pilots. Brother, right now, some of our children, I don't know what's going on, but we need to get our children to get into this, learn how to fly and do certain things and bring it back to our community, you know? Very important.
Well, absolutely. Well, thank you, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you. But Aton has a lot of connections to you could also hit him up on readyforanything.org. He could also tell you about certain black pilots around the world that he knows, that he's worked with.
No, I'm definitely going to bookmark the website.
Yes, sir. Thank you.
Gus, have you posted the article that you said you were going to post? Are you putting it on the webpage itself or on Facebook?
Which article are you talking about?
The one that you were mentioning that's in reference to Tatchell in the UK.
It's on the Facebook page for the cows. It is on I'm trying to distinguish the two. It's on the one that has the cows in parentheses with the COWS. If I'll just email it to you. This is confusing. I'll just email it to you. Yeah, because it's two different pages, so I'll email it to you. I did want to tell folks, if you could visit my blog, racism-notes.blogspot.com, the photos are there from the ladder.com commercial that we were referencing yesterday with the they're two separate commercials, but they both have a black male on the ground. One of them, the white woman, has her feet on his back, and the other one has a white man on top of him gyrating and very sexualized. But those photos are on my blog. You'll see them scrolling by racism-notes.blogspot.com. And, I guess Mr. Edwards, hopefully I plan on having him back as soon as possible to get some more information. Thoroughly enjoyed hearing from him, King Simon, for helping me get him on the program and speaking with us as well this evening. We'll be back tomorrow. Showtime is 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 p.m. Central, and 4 p.m. Pacific. Looking forward to the broadcast every day for the remainder of the month for the fundraiser. Justice, if you want to give out your email and the blog.
Sure, justice.asap@yahoo.com. Again, justice.asap@yahoo.com. Blog address, justdojusticetoday.blogspot.com. Again, justdojusticetoday.blogspot.com. And again, I really, really appreciate people donating.
Oh, come on.
Right away.
I will do it.
And, yeah, we'll be back tomorrow. I think that was it. I shared. Yeah, the information about the folks that wanted the show on dealing with racism, white supremacy at colleges, be it as a student or what have you. I think that's real important, and it seems like we have more than one person that would be willing to participate, I hope. So, you know, anyone listening, I'm thinking this weekend, if you would like to participate in that program, let me know. If this weekend, if you'd like to participate by the time this weekend at 8 p.m. Eastern, if that is not looking good for you, you can let me know that too. But yeah, I would like to do that program, and I'd like to do it this weekend. So we'll see. If you have other ideas for programs, guests, all that, just shoot me an email. As much info possible if it's a guest that you would like on. So website, contact information, email, phone number, what have you. That would be very, very helpful. Or an idea, you know, if it's a book or film or something that you think we should look at and chat about everything. I'm open for pretty much anything at this point. I think other than that, we should be good. We'll be back tomorrow and, yeah, replace white supremacy with justice as soon as possible. And make sure to check out Kara Walker. She does have pretty impressive work. Hopefully we can get her on the program. I would dig it. Anyway, replace white supremacy with justice as soon as possible. Kyle signing out.